Aaron. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
George W. Bush. Now, what do you think that W stands for? That W stands for wrong. Wrong direction. Wrong choices. Wrong priorities. Wrong judgment for our country.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, and babies, whiny babies. Oh, my God, Riley. We're in a few new markets. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you, sir.
This is Air America Radio. You're listening to Morning Sedition. We're happy to be here. We're excited to be here. We're looking forward to a big day of Bush criticism.
That's right. Not
because
bashing.
We've got juice, man. We've got the bully juice today. But I just want to reach out to my fellow liberal brethren, my liberal bully friends. There's no one more vicious and nasty than a liberal in some respects. And I am being a liberal myself and somewhat of a progressive here. But I have to reach out, because we're in new markets, and I just want people to understand. I want to read an email, and I haven't done this in a while, but I feel it's my duty to do this.
Is this liberal hate you're getting ready to?
No, it's not really hate. The thing is, Riley, is that liberals, because it's such a broad umbrella, and there's a certain, supposedly a blanket of tolerance that we're supposed to put out there.
That's not a blanket, that's veneer.
Yeah, it's a veneer of tolerance that, we must tolerate all liberal causes, all progressive causes, and without, being too critical, because criticism could lead to humor. And you don't want to have that sometimes. And also, you can only criticize and be humorous about the people that provoke our hatred, because that's what they do. They provoke our hatred. And that's okay if you focus only on the people that provoke our hatred. And that's all that those people live to do, is provoke liberal hatred and feed conservative anger. So those are the only targets we're allowed to. See, so liberals on a lot of ways suffer from the same narrow-mindedness when it comes to, humor and criticism as conservatives do. There's a certain tendency towards fascistic thinking that I find very annoying, because when I make fun of somebody, or when you and I make fun of one of our own, say Bill Clinton or Al Franken, I get a few emails here and there. They're like, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? Don't you understand? You're helping them. It's like the conservative argument of you're letting them win. It's like, shut it. You know what I mean? I put something in that hole, man, because it's like, for God's sakes, we've got to have a sense of humor about ourselves.
You came that close, didn't you?
But it's just like, I don't want to say shut up, because I'm very tolerant of all this. But if you don't have a sense of humor about yourself, then you're hiding something, and you're just a little cauldron of hate yourself, aren't you? You rationalizing, insecure person. Let me read this email.
Yeah.
And I know this because I am that. I have 3 radios tuned to Air America. Well, okay, problem one. Maybe you should try spending a little time alone with your own thoughts. How would that be? Is it that you just feed on our sort of capacity to speak directly to your particular woes, which I understand, and I think that's great, but, 3 radios? Are they just in your house, or is the one in the car? Are you sure it's not 4 or 5 radios? Boy, man, it must be rough to be that lonely and detached. And I seldom turn them on when your morning show is on. Really, except, I guess, for this one time where you actually woke up early enough because you were crying? What happened? Why were you up so early? Okay, thank God the radio's on. You guys, by and large, are doing incredibly great work. Now,
That's not us, by the way. That's the network.
No, they send it to Morning Sedition thinking that, I won't read it or they won't read it. They think there's this. This is a great thing, too. It's like these emails that are so sort of sneaky, kind of like, could you please do something about those guys in the morning? You're assuming that there are people in charge here. That's hilarious. You can't, we're in the gray zone, man. No one's here. This is us.
We lock the doors, and that's the end of that till 9, pal.
But thanks for your cowardly approach to appealing to my higher-ups to do something about me. If you write the Morning Sedition, we will read them eventually. But let's move on. But the morning show is not right. Mark, we're not right.
We're not right. We're wrong. Right.
They are not funny, and they create satire and make fun of institutions and people that are important to a progressive liberal point of view. Oh, my God. We make fun of ourselves? the nerve of us to have that kind of reflection and that kind of humility. Boy, I wish I lacked the humility this lonely douchebag has with her three radios or his three radios. Man.
Yeah, now, don't put it on females necessarily.
I didn't mean to say douchebag. I got to get my wife says douchebag, and it rubs off on me. All right. They do not seem to see the difference between satiring a right-wing show like Franken does and parodying a show that supports many of the points of view that should be important to them. Oh, so you're speaking for me what should be
important.
So you have dictates? There's some sort of manifesto that I don't know about, you fascist liberal putts? All right, moving on. Here we go. Wait. Okay. They are most offensive when they made fun of Clinton. Yeah, boy. Yeah, we were offensive. And the worst was their take on Al Franken this morning. Horrendous that they make fun of the fella on the show after theirs with a certain, you know, insecure, irrational.
Is there something I'm missing here, Maren? I'm missing something because I'm not hearing what this person is hearing.
Oh, wait, no, let me finish it up now.
Okay, yeah,
these
please.
Two clowns.
Oh, that's me.
Yes.
Hi.
Don't know which side they support. I'm pretty clear about who I support.
I'm an Oakland Raider fan myself.
Okay, good. And they should be yanked from your lineup. That's right. Do something about them. Yank them. Yank them from the lineup. I hate you people that appeal to higher-ups because you're too cowardly to talk to me. Just write the letter to me, you wuss, you liberal paranoid freak with dictates. Fascist liberals are the worst. We should be yanked. Yeah, yank us. Would that make you feel better? So that would feed your little bully juice craving? Yank those guys. Yank them. Get rid of them, man. That would make me feel good. I like to hate our own.
Mm-hmm.
So who's really the hater here? Who is the player hater? Me and Mark
Was
Riley.
Was it signed?
No, of course not. Uh-huh. Me and Mark Riley having a little good-hearted fun at, you know, the expense of Al. I know that offends some of you people, but that's all right. And at the expense of Bill Clinton, who can handle it.
I love Bill Clinton. I met Bill Clinton.
Yeah, you don't have to.
He's got a sense of humor.
We don't have to defend ourselves here.
I know.
I'm just saying that, you know, we spend the whole day doing commentary about what's going on in the world and talking about stuff from the right side of things. I mean, our side, the correct side, the truth side. And this player hater decides to write in and tell us that we need to be yanked, that she doesn't even like our, where is it?
Not she. We don't know it's a she.
He. Yeah, that was from another email. That she can't even, like, you know, yank us.
Crush it up, throw it away.
Oh, so anyways, I just want to say, see you later. See you. Goodbye. It was a pleasure having you here for the 10 minutes that you could. I hope you were able to tune into NPR, whatever lighthearted fare that you could tolerate, whatever humorless mode of listening pleasure that, you know, more appropriately fed your particular ideology, you liberal fascist. See you later.
And stay in touch, will you?
Yeah. So anyways, what were we talking about besides that? Nothing, because we just got here.
We just got here, but there's so much stuff to talk about. Maren.
One more thing. I decided to try to touch one of my cats yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, look at my
hand. I'm not shaking hands with you.
Look at my hand.
I know.
It's ripped to shreds. The cat was like, yeah! It was like unbelievable. And I got it, and I held it for a while, and it was cool for a little while. Mm-hmm. But then it was giving me that look like I just, you know, raped it or something.
No.
It kind of pulled away from the rest of the pack like it was, like, humiliated. Like, you know, like I had somehow dirtied it with my human hands.
No, that's not what it was. It sat there. It was cool for a while, right?
Huh?
It was cool for a little while. And then it freaked out. It's because it remembered. It remembered that it was supposed to be freaked out by humans.
Yeah.
And that's when it went off. You're making progress.
No, I think so, but there's this other way I got to do it, apparently. I got a letter from a very nice person. I love the cat people. Thank you for all your help. To start not depriving them of food, but let them get kind of hungry, then put the food out and kind of sit there next to the food and just let them eat.
So they associate
right
you with something good. Yeah. That's all that is.
Yeah, as opposed to the neurotic person that grabs them occasionally and then gets mad when they don't like me.
Yeah, right. You don't throw things at them, do you?
Of course not.
Of
course I don't throw it. I just demand love.
Okay.
And it is not coming. And I say things like, what? How can he still be afraid of me? I live here.
We're supposed to be boys.
I talked to him about that. All right, so now Bush is, this is the greatest thing that's happened. happened so far. And Tucker Carlson, another guy, that person who wrote me the email, you're just like Tucker Carlson, only you're a liberal version of Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson is very effective in pissing me off, man. I mean, Tucker Carlson was talking to Begala. They were talking about this stuff we're going to talk about right now, which is the Air National Guard records coming out that says pretty much Bush did not follow orders. He was indeed AWOL, whatever you want to call
it. He disobeyed a direct order.
Didn't show up. And Tucker Carlson was, here's how he basically just said, hey, who cares? Air National Guard, ooh, big deal. Air National Guard. Yes, it is a big deal. It is a big deal because it determines the character of this idiot that is in, this AWOL blow monkey that is the President of the United States in the Cheney administration. We're going to get into it when we come back on Air America Radio.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, get your coat, Mom, we're going for a drive. She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Illegal use of the hand.
Defending champion USC.
On the offense.
Defending champion LSU.
Repeat, first down.
The University of Michigan and Notre Dame.
The winningest college programs in history.
Texas and Oklahoma. Tennessee and Georgia.
Saturday is College Game Day on Sirius College Sports Radio, with the top 23 college football teams battling it out for the national championship trophy. Log on to Sirius.com or tune to the preview channel 184 for game times for your favorite team. Sirius Sports, the leader in sports play-by-play.
This is your Icicle Insight on current events. Here's Peter B. Collins.
Philip J. Crowley is a senior fellow and director of National Defense and Homeland Security at the Center for American Progress.
I think there's a lot to be said for the concept of a democracy in the heart of the Middle East that could change the dynamic in that region and force other countries into more representative and less authoritarian regimes, because, you know, clearly, you know, the roots of terror are as much about frustration over an inability to shape a future as it is anything about poverty or deprivation in that part of the country. You have to wonder, will we have the staying power now that we're there and we can disagree over clearly over how we got there and what we're trying to achieve, but now that we're there, there's a clear need to make sure that we leave Iraq better off than they were a year ago.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
Hey, y'all, I'm Kix Brooks.
I'm Ronnie Dunn.
And we're Brooks.
And Dunn for Rad. And I've got a four-letter word for you. Don't. As in, don't drive drunk.
Yeah, and I got a three-letter word for you, as in get. Get the key.
When you see someone who's about to drive under the influence,
get the key.
Because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Yeah, here we go. Let's get into the issues. I blew off some steam. You know, I don't know why I get so worked up. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition. It's Air America Radio. It's 19 past the hour, and we're going to take him down today because this deserves to be out there. The AWOL blow monkey president in the Cheney administration of the Republican death cult has now been revealed to not only be the entitled, smug, arrogant, spoiled, snot-nosed bastard that he is, but also to, you know, have he's taking no responsibility for being literally AWOL.
Well, he's taking no responsibility for earlier statements he made that would say, I guess you can't even say hint, said directly that he served honorably in the Texas Air National Guard.
Right.
That seems to be very much in question. After the release of some documents, documents, by the way, that at one point the Pentagon said did not exist, Dan Rather, of CBS kind of wraps and ties the entire situation here in talking about Bush's squadron commander, Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Killian, and some of the memos that he wrote. Let's go to that sound.
One of the Killian memos is an official order to George W. Bush to report for a physical. Mr. Bush never carried out that order. On August 1st of 1972, Lieutenant Bush was suspended from flying status for failure to accomplish his annual medical examination. That document was released years ago, but until now, this document has not been seen. It is a memorandum Colonel Jerry Killian put in his own file that same day. It says, on this date, I ordered that First Lieutenant Bush be suspended, not just for failing to take a physical, but also for failing to perform to U.S. Air Force, Texas Air National Guard standards. The colonel goes on, the officer, meaning then Lieutenant Bush, has made no attempt to meet his training certification or flight physical.
Now, this is deep, and I'll tell you why it's deep. The United States government and the U.S. military spends huge amounts of money training people to fly planes. Okay,
right.
this is not something. You know, it spends money on infantry people and all of that, but they spend a lot of money and a lot of time and put a lot of effort into training people to fly these very sophisticated jet aircraft.
Sure.
What happened in this instance was people were starting to say, wait a minute, we spent all this money on this guy, and essentially, he's a slacker. He doesn't fly when he's supposed to. He doesn't show up for physicals. And he did not. And this was the thing that Dan Rather pointed out here. He didn't perform up to standard. We all knew that he had been suspended for not taking the physical. That was a matter of public record already. What wasn't a matter of public record was the idea that George W. Bush also failed to perform to standard. He's never admitted that.
Failed to perform for standard when he didn't submit himself for the test for the health department for the physical.
But see, it's two different things.
Right. Apparently he was pretty good initially. Then everything started to go bad on him, I guess. And this is around the same time that his father had him removed from Houston because he was such a drunken, out of control, spoiled little brat, and moved him to Alabama to be babysat by the Allisons, who were friends of the family. And he was supposed to re-up with Alabama, and none of those guys remember seeing him. He never put his uniform on, apparently. And then, I'm just rambling here, Riley.
No. You're rambling correctly, and you're showing part of a pattern.
Right. So he was basically too, you know, messed up on booze and drugs to stay in town because he was embarrassing the family, was moved to Alabama to, quote-unquote, work on a campaign for a friend of his father's, and was supposed to go report for service there, didn't show up there, okay, and the woman he was staying with says she doesn't remember him ever suiting up. Then he goes to Boston to finish up college, where he's supposed
Harvard
to re-up with the local National Guard, International Guard there, never even showed up at all.
No, in fact, what the White House is now saying is that he read up not in Massachusetts but in Denver, Colorado. But see, now these Killian memos,
that's extremely weird. That means that, you know, instead of signing up in the Boston Air Unit, instead he had his name added to the roster of a paper unit in Denver, which means somebody above him, like this guy was being taken care of the whole way. That's, I think, the most important thing to realize, is that he had his father's friends get him out of the Vietnam draft. He had his father's friends get him in to the Air National Guard. Lieutenant Governor, you know, Ben Barnes admitted to that last night on 60 Minutes.
Absolutely.
And then he goes to Alabama to be babysat by his family's friends so he doesn't make a fool out of himself in town, and he tries to get himself under control, does not show up for duty there. Then one of his father's friends, you know, tries to, you know, figures out a way that he can sign up in Denver to a post where he doesn't have to show up, as opposed to show up in Boston where he's, you know, supposed to actively show up for duty. So the whole thing was being managed by his father's friends through political means.
Well, see, the other thing you got to look at here, Mark, is anybody else with that kind of record, what sort of evaluation do you think they'd get from their superior?
Mm-hmm.
Not a real glowing one, right?
Right.
Well,
absolutely.
Let's listen to Dan Rather from CBS talk about another memo that the late Colonel Killian issued about being pressured to sugarcoat George W. Bush's evaluation.
This memo is from August 18th, 1973. Colonel Killian titled it CYA. In it, Killian says General Buck Stout, the man in charge of the Texas Air National Guard, is putting on pressure to sugarcoat an evaluation of Lieutenant Bush. Stout, a longtime friend and supporter of the Bush family, would not do an interview for this broadcast. The memo goes on, with Killian saying, I'm having trouble running interference and doing my job.
Unbelievable.
That's extremely telling. And you got to start. The first question you got to ask yourself, Mark Maron, is what prevented George W. Bush from fulfilling this direct order? By the way, you know, you disobey a direct order under most circumstances in the military, you get charged with insubordination, you get court-martialed, whatever. But why did he avoid so studiously taking this physical?
I'll tell you why. Does this ring a bell? Is that reading at all?
Yeah, but that eventually goes through your system, doesn't
that.
It?
Or maybe waking up a little bit. Oh, you mean maybe this?
I don't know, that
stays in your system for like 30 days. Cocaine will stay in your system for about a week. I don't know how I know this. I've never had a real job. You know, and I feel bad for people who get tested for drugs where they work.
So do I. But, I mean, if you're flying an F-1, what is that, an F-102? It'd be nice if people knew that you were clean and sober. But there's a reason why this man would not get tested. He's never spoken to it. Even in this instance, his military superiors have never spoken.
Yeah, I was just talking about jobs, not the military. They should definitely test people. And they should certainly test the president every day for drugs.
Well, yeah, I would think so. But he's supposed to be clean and sober now.
Yeah, but what you're saying is, I didn't mean to interrupt your train of thought, is what we're speculating on is what Kelly is saying in her book, is that, you know, he was probably wasted. I mean, there was no doubt that this guy was out of control, that he's never owned up to this. And the most disturbing part of it for me, in my mind, and this is the commander-in-chief, quote-unquote, in the Cheney administration, who says, you know, that he's the wartime president. And this is a guy that, you know, let me just reread this. This was, Bush was suspended from flying for Texas Air National Guard. This is a memorandum, August 1st, 1972. Quote, on this date, I ordered that First Lieutenant Bush be suspended from flight status due to a failure to perform to USAF, Texas Air National Guard standards, and failure to meet annual physical examination as ordered. The officer has made no attempt to meet his training certification flight physical. Officer expresses desire to transfer out of state, including assignment to non-flying billets. On recommendation of Harris, that's Lieutenant Colonel William D. Harris, Jr., I also suggested we fill this critical billet with a more seasoned pilot from the list of qualified Vietnam pilots that have rotated. He was requesting to be replaced by a guy who actually, you know, went to war, by a guy who actually, you know, avoided death in Vietnam, was willing to put his life on the line. So this guy, this entitled, arrogant little rich kid, says, please help me get someone sent in there who is willing to fight for their country, because I got a party. I got business school to go to.
Who's more willing to fight for country than I am?
And this is a guy that has the nads to question the integrity of a true veteran. This guy didn't protest the war. This guy tried to get out of it so he could party. And so he wouldn't have to be, you know, he wouldn't have to put his life on the line.
Incredible. When we come back, the president's palm pilot, journalist Borzu Deragahi from Iraq, and the liberal agenda, all for you on Air America Radio. Stay with us.
Are you losing your hair? Dr. Gary Gordon, Chief Medical Director at the world-renowned Gordon Research Institute, describes exciting new research guaranteed to solve your hair problem.
New data released by the FDA indicates that the body chemical dehydrotestosterone, commonly known as DHT, is the leading cause of hair loss. At our institute, we studied numerous hair loss treatments and found that Folinex is the most effective solution for stimulating new hair growth in balding areas. If you want to stop DHT from causing any further hair loss, then I strongly recommend that you try Folinex now. Folinex's DHT blocker has been used successfully for over 8 years by tens of thousands of men and women. Folinex is powerful enough to regrow hair on virtually anyone, we guarantee it.
Folinex is available for a limited time at half the price of other competitors. Folinex is guaranteed to work for you. So order risk-free now by calling 800-256-8214. That's 800-256-8214. Call 800-256-8214.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The Bush administration is suffering from the effects of shell shocks this morning after it was disclosed that the government's top gun was a substandard pilot who disobeyed a direct order while serving the Texas Air National Guard over 30 years ago. John Kerry yesterday connected the dots again for American voters at a campaign stop in Cincinnati. Kerry charges the president with spending an excessive amount of money in Iraq while ignoring the needs of the average American at home. Kerry again charges Bush is making wrong choices for the country. American war jets pounded Fallujah yesterday, causing some extensive damage, but the bombardment had done little in a way to force Sunni militants from abandoning their hold on the city. Senate and House Armed Services Committees are holding hearings this morning, reviewing the Defense Department's two latest reports on prisoner abuse, and the Caribbean has been taking a pounding from the latest weather event to hit the region. It's Hurricane Ivan, a Category 5 storm. Wayne Gilman, Air America, Radio News.
The Connection from NPR. Where do you go for your daily shot of intellectual caffeine? Think of The Connection as a supersized Bendy with a whole lot of frothy ideas, angles, and attitude. It will get you going, thinking, dreaming, and make it very hard to slow down. I'm Dick Gordon. Join us on The Connection from NPR.
The Connection, weekdays, live at 10 a.m. Eastern on NPR Talk 107.
This is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. An emailer wants to consolidate their bills with Ameridebt. My advice after this.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Bill emails wanting to know if consolidating with Ameridebt is a good plan. What do you think of Ameridebt? I've gotten behind on my bills. Should I use them? No, because they have a horrible reputation. Attorneys general in many states are attacking them, trying to shut them down, drive them out of states. Really bad Better Business Bureau reports. Bottom line is they mistreat customers. The big reason I don't recommend Ameridebt or any of these other things where they take your bills and pay them for you instead of you doing your own thing, well, it's because it destroys your credit. You go to get a mortgage after using one of these bill-paying programs like Ameridebt, you will be treated as if you have filed a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. That is according to Fannie Mae, FHA, and VA guidelines. I didn't make that up. So don't go into one of those programs if you don't want to make a mess of your credit. You work your way through it. You just need a plan. You need to write it down. Take care of necessities first. Food, shelter, clothing, transportation, and utilities before you do anything else.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
The hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. Good morning to all of you people with more than three radios.
Thank you.
I have two radios. I have one in the kitchen, and I have one in my living room.
I have about four, and I have one in the car, but I never set them all to the same thing. That's insane.
Hold on a minute. See you later, Ramon. Here's the presidential palm pilot for today. Here's the schedule. As the, oh, my God.
That was a dream,
I'm dreaming
pilot.
That the dream music just happened. Here's the schedule for today. 8 o'clock a.m. Wake up. Stay on message. If you believe all the negative military records about me, then the terrorists have won. 10 a.m. Have FBI find out where 60 Minutes gets their information. Discredit them, then hire them. Talk, Mark. It's me. I'm talking to myself, Riley, not you. 11:30 a.m. Go to Pennsylvania. Again, note, fine suit with no buttons or zippers. Beard? 1 p.m. Attend rally, Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Blame their lack of jobs on Philadelphia welfare queens. 3 p.m. at 10 rally, Colmar, Pennsylvania. Blame high mercury levels in their water on greedy trial lawyers. 5 p.m. security briefing. Number of terrorist attacks during my administration? 1. Number of terrorist attacks during the Kerry administration? He won't say. The man just keeps ducking the issue. 7 p.m. dinner with Jenna and Barbara. Ask if they have any college friends hot enough to seduce John Kerry sometime in late October. 9 p.m., shred, shred, shred. If it's paper, shred it. 11 p.m., bedtime, sleep on mattress stuffed with shredded medical files of my coke addiction. Yes, the blow monkey AWOL, president of the Republican death cult Cheney administration. Right now, one of our favorites, a journalist who is reporting from Iran, Iraq, and occasionally from Afghanistan. He's on the phone from Baghdad. Borzu Daragahi is here. Good morning, Borzu.
Good morning. How are you doing, Mark?
Hey, Borzu.
Very well. What's it like in Baghdad today?
It's very hot. The temperature is very hot.
The tension is very high. The fear factor for the small cadre of foreigners who are based here and work here and make a living here is very high.
Are they bolstering security because of the two women that were recently taken hostage?
Yeah, there's many, many worries about security because of the two women who were taken hostage. They were grabbed from their offices in broad daylight by 20 armed men. There's many concerns that if you go outside of Baghdad, you'll be kidnapped. As a matter of fact, today I was supposed to go to Najaf, but because of security concerns, we decided to just stay put in Baghdad because the road to Najaf has gotten so dangerous. Apparently, they're targeting any suspected foreigners they see on the road and grabbing them and taking them and holding them for ransom or for political demands.
Borza, we've seen two reports back here in the States, one from a London-based organization that says civil war could well follow an American pullout from Iraq. The other, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, says the continuing violence there seriously jeopardizes next year's elections. Both reports within the realm of possibility?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, there's the possibility of civil war here has been talked about for a long time. I mean, there's several huge kind of fractures within Iraqi society, ethnic, religious. But I think the biggest sort of divide in Iraq is between the secular people and the religious fundamentalists and the poor people who go along with their religious fundamentalists, no matter what they say. And that's the real possibility that maybe a lot of people don't talk about. As far as the elections, I don't see how they're going to do elections in certain places like Fallujah and Samarra and Ramadi that are so dangerous that not even U.S. troops dare enter. So I don't know how they're going to get election workers and poll workers into certain parts of Iraq that are kind of off limits.
Could you give us define the insurgency for us right now? I mean, is it primarily religious reactionaries, or are they still several different groups?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There are several different groups. I would say, in general, the insurgency is being carried out by religious fundamentalists. But the way they're appealing and getting a broad support to the people is through nationalism. Let me give you a good example of that. Muqtada al-Sadr is a junior cleric, and when he first came onto the political scene, he used a lot of religious terminology. He kind of cloaked himself in the green flag of Islam. He showed off his status as a descendant of the Prophet. And now, when you see him in posters and banners and so on, he's always standing in front of the Iraqi flag, and he's really sort of taken up the nationalist banner, and that's how he's, that's his political strategy. I don't know who his Karl Rove is, but he was a smart guy, and he made him a very big guy in Iraq, little Muqtada.
So is there any chance that any of the Ba'athists that were once within Saddam's regime are advising Muqtada al-Sadr?
I don't know about that. I doubt that. The Ba'athists are just not an issue at this point. I mean, for Iraqis, they consider it the whole Ba'athist thing, the whole Saddam loyalist thing that the Americans seem to harp on a lot as a joke. For example, when there was a rumor that they caught Izzat al-Dhuri, the number 5 on the list of 55, last week, I think a lot of Iraqis just shrugged. I mean, I talked to a lot of them, and they're like, who is this guy? He was the guy who mopped Saddam's floors.
All right, Borzu, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Borzu Daragahi and more about the situation in Iraq after this. It's 39 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Wouldn't it be great if you found a radio show that talked about which beer was more likely to give you a hangover? Or which new action movie was actually a chick flick in disguise? Wouldn't it be great to know that you're not the world's most gaseous man, despite what your ball and chain tells you? And ladies, wouldn't it be great to spend a little time listening in on what your guy likes to talk about when he's out with his buddies?
Oh, yeah.
I'm Mike Church, and welcome to my world.
Mike Church, weekdays 5 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Sirius Talk Central 148.
This is your Icicle Insight on current events. Here's Peter B. Collins.
Ambassador Joseph Wilson, what we've seen is that there were very few terrorists in Iraq, if any, before we launched our invasion, and now it's become a hotbed for terrorists.
Well, it's very clear that this war was undertaken under false pretenses. The argument of weapons of mass destruction didn't hold up before the war. Certainly has been fully discredited after the war. The links, the operational links to terrorism with a global reach, to use the president's own words, have never been demonstrated, not to mention beyond a shadow of a doubt, have never been plausible. Leaving us with the argument that the president made the other day on his interview with Tim Russert, that this was a madman, badman war.
Right.
He went to war to get rid of a madman and a badman. Now, the trouble is, when we constitute our military forces, we constitute them to defend the United States. We have other tools in our toolbox to go after madman, badman.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
Welcome to Classes on Tape.
Okay.
Repeat the following phrase. Son, you did great on that test. I'm so proud of you.
Son, you did great on that test. I'm so proud of you.
Hey, Dad. How's it going?
Son, you're so proud. And that's a great test.
It's really not that difficult. Encourage them. Get them to graduate. Don't drop out on your kids. For a free brochure, call 877-4KID. That's 877-F-O-R-A-K-I-D. This message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
There's a good reason why doctors and dentists are always washing their hands. Soap and hot water remove harmful bacteria, including the bugs that cause food-related illnesses. Keep it clean in the kitchen. Wash hands, utensils, and work surfaces thoroughly before preparing and eating a meal after handling raw poultry, meat, eggs, and seafood. This reminder brought to you by the Partnership for Food Safety Education.
What's up, y'all? This Jay Bug.
Yo, yo, this Raz B.
Yo, what's up? This Lil Fizz.
Yo, what up, Omarion?
And we're B2K.
Right now, we working in the studio.
And that's a lot of work. When we go on tour, we perform live.
We have to know our dance routines, words to the songs, music.
And we have to be on point every time. Our music is pretty energetic.
I mean, it's a real hard job.
You can't look sloppy on stage.
That's why we don't have time for drugs.
You want to get somewhere?
Forget about drugs.
A message from Partnership for a Drug-Free America and MAP.
Visit drugfreeamerica.org.
Back in it, Morning Sedition. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Hi.
We're on the phone with Borzu Dargahi, a journalist who is currently in Baghdad. Borzu, how come there's been such an escalation? We just crossed 1,000 American deaths and just, you know, a horrendous number of Iraqis killed. And how come that number keeps escalating, and how are cities being lost? I don't understand.
Well, the reason why the numbers are escalating is because the insurgency hasn't let up. The various militias, Islamic groups, fly-by-night, cliques of friends who have a grudge against the Americans aren't letting up. In fact, it seems they're getting more organized, better equipped, and a little smarter in terms of their tactics and so on. I need an example. I was in Sadr City. Every time you go to Sadr City, you know, you talk to the people in the streets and you show off about how we downed this helicopter, how we downed that helicopter, and you're just like, yeah, right.
So you're saying that there are actually... You're saying that there are secular Iraqis who are just like fly-by-night groups of friends, like, you know, maybe, you know, people in their early 20s or even in their teens who are just, you know, getting together for a night out and they're shooting down helicopters?
Not necessarily shooting down helicopters. They've always claimed that they shoot down helicopters. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the sense I get. I mean, that's the sense I get from a lot of people. And I even see people who, I mean, it's very strange. I even see people that I work with, Iraqis that I work with, and, you know, whenever they're around the militants, whenever we go into Sadr City and we're seeing fighting, I can see that they're sort of attracted by it, that they consider this maybe in their heart a legitimate cause, you know, even if they are not willing to go out and fight themselves. And who knows, maybe after they depart from me in the afternoon, they are going out and fighting.
Wow.
But, you know, yeah, I can definitely see this phenomenon happening, you know, where a lot of people you wouldn't expect are at least sympathetic towards the resistance. But what I was saying is that, go ahead.
No, I was just going to let our audience know we're talking to journalist Borzu Deragahi. He is on the ground in Baghdad. Borzu, can you answer me a question about Fallujah? It seems as though, first of all, the Fallujah Brigade, which was in part organized by the United States, obviously has all but disappeared, according to reports we have. And there is an organization called the Mujahideen Shura Council that actually runs the city. How did that happen? And apparently they say they've killed more than 30 people for spying for the Americans. Is the Americans' position not to go into Fallujah and use force other than the strikes that they've been having?
I'm not exactly sure what the American position on Fallujah is. They officially say that they have confidence in the Fallujah Brigade and that, they're only recently they started admitting that, yeah, indeed, what we've been reporting for many months now, that Fallujah is in the hands of a Taliban-like Islamist movement that's running the city. The way it happened is that the cost of the casualties got so high, it got so brutal, the opposition to the U.S. occupation, the U.S. presence even, was so dramatic that they just made an apparent calculated political and military decision to just back off. I know the military commanders are more into going in there and, crushing the insurgency than some of the political people on the people on the political side who say that it might be political disaster for the interim Iraqi government if they were to go in there full guns blazing. It would be interesting to see what happens after the presidential elections in the U.S., whether the U.S. and its Iraqi allies decide to go full bore into Fallujah, Samarra, Ramadi.
What's Alawi doing? We haven't seen much of him here. Is he present there? Is he showing up? Is he on television? Is he making statements?
Occasionally he makes statements on television. He issues press releases, a lot of tough talk. But he doesn't really, it seems like he had a brief honeymoon period. I would say that right after the handover, there was a period of maybe a few weeks where people were rather optimistic, and, July was a good month for Iraq. And he had sort of a reprieve, I think, a little chance to get his bearing together. But I think that's quickly fading, and people are starting to talk about Alawi as a puppet now. They ignore him. They say he's useless. And the interim government is looking increasingly weak.
So the possibilities for civil war and the insurgency, getting stronger or at least remaining committed is high.
I don't know about the civil war. I wouldn't rate the civil war, in terms of probability. But in terms of the insurgency getting stronger, getting larger, getting more dramatic, they're getting more skilled, it seems. I've never seen them. They always claimed to disable tanks, for example, in Sadr City, kids in Sadr City. But apparently this week they actually managed to disable two tanks. I saw the tank treads. The U.S. confirmed that two of the vehicles were badly damaged in Sadr City. And if they manage to do that, that means they're learning, they're kind of evolving, and they're picking up new skills, which is not a good sign for the U.S. soldiers that are here.
Boards, and final question. Do everyday Iraqis still have hope that their lives are going to get better through all this? Are they getting more power? Are they getting their kids to school? Those sorts of, grassroots issues?
I've been gone for 2 months, and I just got back a week ago, and it seems like nothing has changed as far as infrastructure. It seems like the most, sadly, it seems like the most popular locale for Iraqis is the passport office. People dying to get their passports so they can begin the steps of getting out of Iraq, which is a really sad thing. I talked to a lot of very educated Iraqis, a lot of very decent, good, hardworking Iraqis whose main goal right now is to find a way to get their families out of the country, maybe to Syria, maybe, the dream is to the UK or England. It's not a very good, I sense a real depressed, it's a very depressing place today, Iraq.
Well, be careful, Borzu. Thank you for joining us. It's always informative and good to talk to you.
Take care, Borzu.
Wow. So listen to the message our president has got us into over there.
He isn't painting a pretty picture.
Oh, my God. It's so disturbing. Every time we talk to him, initially, there was hope and there was a lot of, optimism. I remember when we talked to him that towards the beginning, where it was like, well, there's traffic's bad, but, there's... things might be changing. There's a lot of things that need to be rebuilt. And now, like, he's literally saying that intellectuals and the people that can afford to are trying to get out at any cost.
Iraqis everyday Iraqis are discouraged from having any contact or showing any support for either the interim Iraqi government, which apparently a lot of people see as puppets, or of the United States, because they're executing people that they say are spying for the Americans. So there's and that Iraqi military that the Americans were supposed to be training, that was supposed to be taking over gradually from the American troops in terms of policing and those sorts of functions, doesn't seem to be existing in many of these places. The Fallujah Brigade, as you heard Boris say, seemingly doesn't exist anymore.
It's just unbelievable to me that there was, you know, though oppressive and a horrendous government there before, it was a secular government where, you know, intellectuals and doctors and people, engineers and all this type of people could work. And now what you have is chaos that's verging on Islamic revolution, which wasn't there before. It's mind blowing. We'll talk more about it when we come back. It's 51 past the hour on Air America Radio. Hey, check us out at morningsedition.com, where you can blog, email, and waste lots of time at work looking at our links.
Hi, I'm Larry Meisterich. I'm a filmmaker and a citizen, not a politician. I believe passionately in the freedom of expression, an idea that is increasingly threatened by today's administration. Films play an important role in bringing social issues to the public. Yet fewer films receive distribution today, especially those expressing an alternative point of view. Seven conglomerates now control which films you get to see. Film Movement and Air America Radio are trying to change all that. Subscribe to Film Movement at airamericaradio.com and receive a new, first-run film to own on DVD each month. Award-winning films with strong social messages. Important films such as Falling Angels with Miranda Richardson about the American family in the 1960s. And The Party's Over about the state of democracy in America. These films are exclusively available through Film Movement. We thank you for your support in our mission to bring alternative voices in film to America. Please visit airamericaradio.com and help make a difference.
Serious?
Illegal use of the hand.
Defending champion USC.
On the offense.
Defending champion LSU.
Repeat first down.
The University of Michigan and Notre Dame.
The winningest college programs in history.
Texas at Oklahoma. Tennessee at Georgia.
Saturday is College Game Day on Sirius College Sports Radio, with the top 23 college football teams battling it out for the national championship trophy. Log on to Sirius.com or tune to the preview channel 184 for game times for your favorite team. Sirius Sports, the leader in sports play-by-play.
There's something important you can do to help your child develop properly starting at birth. Have your baby's hearing tested and follow up on any advice you're given. It's easy, inexpensive, and can help you protect your child's ability to learn. For more information, contact the American Speech Language Hearing Association on the web at asha.org or call 1-800-638-8255. 1-800-638-8255.
If you have kids, chances are you don't know that right now in your house, something potentially deadly is waiting for your children. It's disguised as ordinary household products that kids as young as 10 sniff to get high. These kids don't know that sniffing can cause instant death. Talk to your kids. If you know what they're up to, they're much less likely to sniff inhalants. Awareness, the anti-drug.
If you think of a library as that place where shh is the only thing you hear, think again. Many are being forced to cut back hours, reduce services, even close their doors. The time to support your local library is now. Contact your library to find out how you can help keep the doors open. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. For more info, visit the American Library Association at www.ala.org.
Lines up. 54 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. We just talked to Borzu Daragahi in Baghdad with a very grim report about the Cheney administration's horrendous war there. You know, it's just... it's so disturbing to hear what's going on and to hear that, you know, to hear, like, Bush yesterday, and we crossed a horrendous milestone as a country. We've lost over 1,000 soldiers in Iraq, which is, it's horrible.
Yeah.
And there's, like, maybe up to 30,000 dead Iraqis. And he's telling us that there are kids on the street that will sometimes go out and take a few pop shots at American soldiers, like, you know, some kids here go out drinking or go to the mall.
Yeah.
And as our producer, Brendan P.W. McDonald, mentioned to me on the break, that what's really disturbing is that during Saddam Hussein's rule, that it was against the law to study religion. It was that, tyrannically secular.
Government, yeah.
But, oppressively secular. And now all these kids whose country has been overrun by us are now being exposed to a weird combination of radical Islam and nationalism that, as Borzu said, is very appealing to them, that it gives them purpose. And when the infrastructure, all these cities are crumbled, there's not a lot of hope around. You know, what you're creating there, what Bush and company, or Cheney, the Cheney administration, the Republican death cult, has created, is a haven for Islamic fundamentalism, radical Islam, for terrorism, for all types of insurgencies to sort of unify in an almost a pan-Arabic kind of, radical Islamic front that could be the capital of it, of all these cities that are out of control. So he's really set the stage for a war that could go on, indefinitely. And ultimately, that's what he did. And whether it was intentional or not, a lot of people think this is a big screw-up. In my head somewhere, I think that they almost wanted to create a never-ending war. And at a funeral service, not a funeral service, but in response to the 1,000 deaths, Bush said yesterday, quote, ultimately we will prevail because liberty changes countries. Liberty changes the habits of people. Liberty promotes peace. And that's why we appreciate the sacrifice of the men and women who wear the uniform. They're serving a great cause, end quote. If that's what liberty looks like, what we just heard from Borzu, I don't know. I've been defining it wrong.
MoveOn.org is honoring the soldiers who've been killed in Iraq. They're holding candlelight vigils across the country tonight. And you can go to morningsedition.com for more information on that. They're taking place, and you can actually locate one that is near you.
Yeah, and that would be a nice thing to do. Some people are saying if you can't go to one, put a candle outside your door or outside your window or just maybe even in your bedroom there.
There you go.
And that can have a dual purpose. Right now, there's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Was that wrong?
No. It's okay.
Take a moment of silence. Here we go. 60 Minutes interview with Ben Barnes released theatrically in IMAX and Dolby. 2, unionized contestants on The Apprentice. 3, if assault weapons ban lapses, arm yourself with better information and more withering comments. 4, throw glittering celebrity-filled party to celebrate court decision saying partial birth abortion is unconstitutional. Order partial birth abortion ice sculpture. All right, that's more wrong than the weird thing I just said. 5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Quote, why are we always talking about the terrorists winning? Can't we each do our own thing without it getting so competitive? And quote. I'm sorry about that comment I made before. It was wrong. Yeah, please take a few minutes to remember the dead.
Absolutely. Coming up in the next hour of Morning's Edition, Mark Maron's Dream Diary, The Rapture Watch, Iraq, Birth of a Nation, You on the Telephones, and so much more here on Air America Radio.
If you look in your kitchen cabinet, chances are good that it contains iodized salt. Not so for millions of people all over the world who don't know to use iodized salt or can't get it. Iodine deficiency is the major cause of severe learning difficulties in children and can even cause a drop in IQ of 10 to 15 points. The solution? Use small amounts of iodized salt regularly. Help future generations reach their full potential. And please, pass the iodized salt.
When was the last time you tested your smoke alarms? Last month? Last year? Can't remember? If you're not sure your smoke alarms are working, then how can you be sure you'll be protected if a fire breaks out? Don't gamble with your life and assume your smoke alarms are working. Test each one every month so you know they'll be ready to protect you and your family if there's a fire. Test your alarms for life.
Uncensored.
Uncensored.
Uncut.
Uncut.
Satellite Fresh.
Satellite Fresh.
Sirius, it's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. From all indications, the Bush White House has egg on its face this morning, having to respond to a series of allegations on the president's military record predicated on memos from Bush's former squadron commander. Those memos were from the late Lieutenant Colonel Jerry B. Killian. Killian's memorandums have painted a graphic picture of the president's behavior over 30 years ago, which CBS News has exposed. Documents from Killian indicates that Bush failed to carry out a direct order from his superior to take a medical examination, preventing him from remaining a qualified pilot. The White House reportedly this morning has admitted the president was suspended from Guard service for his actions in response to the charges. Retired military officials are calling for an independent investigation to get to the bottom of the prison abuse scandals in Iraq. Their calls come as Senate and House Armed Services Committees hold hearings this morning reviewing the Defense Department's two latest reports on the abuse. In a letter sent to President Bush, the retired officers say the country cannot ignore that there are now dozens of well-documented allegations of torture, abuse, and otherwise questionable detention practices in Iraq. They say in-house Pentagon probes lack the necessary power to get to the truth, and a Democratic senator says most of the piecemeal investigations have left the public without a full picture of what happened and who ordered the practices. Bush administration's failure to supply Iraq contracts awarded without competitive bids, including the one for Halliburton, has hampered the United Nations mandated agency to watch over Iraq's oil money. International Advisory and Monitoring Board says they've hit a brick wall trying to get information from the U.S. government on the audits of contracts which were paid with Iraqi oil money. Agency initially requested the U.S. audits in March as part of its job to examine the Iraqi oil revenues. The IAMB expressed its strong concern with the delays that hamper fulfillment of its mandate. International law requires the U.S.-led coalition provisional authority to use the Iraqi oil money only for the benefit of the Iraqi people. John Kerry yesterday took his campaign for the presidency to Cincinnati to the historic Union Station to blast President Bush about his handling of the war and the economy. Kerry connected the dots with supporters, charging Bush with the misuse of $200 billion. Kerry said the same money should have been used to jumpstart the nation's economy here at home by providing jobs, improving education and health care. Kerry again charged Bush with making the wrong choices for the country. Kerry has redirected the course of his campaign in the remaining weeks before the general election with the encouragement of other Democrats. The candidate is turning the tables on Bush, subjecting him to the same kind of scrutiny and criticism Kerry has suffered from pro-Bush supporters. And in other news, several Caribbean islands have suffered the brunt of the latest storm churning up the Atlantic. It's Hurricane Ivan, now staying at a Category 5. There were 12 deaths reported in Grenada and 90% damage to homes and other property, including a prison. Scores of criminals have been forced.
Illegal use of that hand.
Defending champion, USC.
On the offense.
Defending champion, LSU.
Repeat, first down.
The University of Michigan and Notre Dame.
The winningest college programs in history.
Texas at Oklahoma. Tennessee at Georgia.
Saturday is College Game Day on Sirius College Sports Radio, with the top 23 college football teams battling it out for the national championship trophy. Log on to Sirius.com or tune to the preview channel 184 for game time for your favorite team. Sirius Sports, the leader in sports play-by-play.
This is Earth and Sky. A listener wants to know, why do deserts become such fertile land once water is used for irrigation? I thought deserts were just sand.
Only a small percent of the world's warm deserts are covered by sand. Most desert soils are composed of sediments deposited during wetter periods of Earth's history. Many of what are now desert basins were once grasslands crossed by rivers and lakes. Soils formed by these kinds of floodplains and lake deposits tend to be muddy and nutrient-rich.
A big factor in the productivity of irrigated deserts is the length of the growing season. In most of the world's warm deserts, you can grow crops year-round. Plus, lots of sun makes plants grow fast.
But irrigation in the desert can also turn good soil bad. If the soil doesn't have good natural drainage, it gets waterlogged. Also, in the process of irrigation, salts can build up.
That's because water used for irrigation often contains more salts than rainwater. These salts can be left behind as irrigation water evaporates from the fields. That's our show for today. To ask us your science question, come to our website, earthsky.org. With thanks to the National Science Foundation, I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Joel Block for Earth and Sky.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron. You're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Fire truck! Why don't they talk about the issues? We're fighting for our lives here.
George W. Bush. Now, what do you think that W stands for? That W stands for wrong. Wrong direction. Wrong choices. Wrong priorities. Wrong judgment for our country.
That's right. Good morning, geniuses, babies, liberal fascists, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, dreamers of dreams. Our AWOL faux Christian blow monkey sock puppet of the Cheney administration Republican death cult president. A failure to follow direct orders in the Air National Guard. Yes, this is not slander. This is not an attack. This is not old news. This is journalism. This is stuff that is real. It has been reported. It has been, you know, proven from the documents that this guy was an entitled, smug, arrogant little rich kid who did everything he could to avoid service. And then after, you know, after he was called on it, he refused to take responsibility for it. And this is who is president. If you don't think that that somehow implies or somehow resonates with who this guy is today, then you're out of your mind. This is a guy that is overseeing the death of over 1,000 American soldiers in a cause that is based on a lie. And he has made terrorism worse, and now it turns out that he has no respect for the military. When he was in it, he did not respect the line of command. He did not even show up for duty because it just wasn't important to him. And he tried to get out of it, and when he was, you know, He had all his father's friends working on his behest. It was complete irresponsibility and complete negligence, and there's proof now. And this isn't a slander campaign. This isn't Swift Votes for Truth. And I'll tell you another thing, Mark Riley, how are you? Is that CNN, you know, and all these news outlets are completely sympathetic to the Republican cause. They do not report this in the same way they reported the Swift Vote Veterans for Truth. This president didn't even protest the Vietnam War. He tried to avoid it with everything he had in his father's arsenal. You got a guy in John Kerry who went to war, assessed it, had a moral, you know, a fight of conscience in trying to assess the Vietnam War as whether it was right or wrong on a personal level after being there, made decisions for himself, was courageous on both in active combat and in protesting the war, and then you got this little entitled guy that doesn't take responsibility for anything, that's got an administration being run by the vice president who does everything they can to insulate him from any reality and make sure he doesn't take responsibility for anything, and that pattern has been going on since the late 60s.
Since the late 60s, this man has been ducking and dodging. And certainly during the period from 1968, which is when he first signed up and made that commitment to the Texas Air National Guard, through 1973, which was the last time I guess anybody saw him do anything connected with the Air National Guard, the man ducked, he dodged. These new memos from Lieutenant Colonel Jerry B. Killian, who passed away, I believe, about 20 years ago,
right,
who was his squadron commander. In the Texas Air National Guard,
yes,
could not be more plain,
yes,
about what George Bush was up to, who greased the skids for this guy, and you'd have to be completely crazy to think that this man, who is now President of the United States, did not know that these people were doing these things on his behalf, greasing the skids, getting him involved in a political campaign where he didn't have to show up to work, ducking a direct order to take a physical. You would get court-martialed. Anybody else would get court-martialed.
He expected it. His parents, you know, entitled him to this. It's amazing to me that when he was in the Texas Air National Guard, he became such a nuisance to his family and such a belligerent, drunk, you know, out-of-control person within the town that his parents said, look, we got to get him out of here because, you know, if I can't stop him, no one can stop him, but he's starting to make us look bad. They send him to Alabama. Did he go and re-up for his National Guard duty? Not according to the Allisons, who were watching over him. They saw no indication that he was showing up for duty. So then he ducks out of that. Then he goes to Boston to go to business school, I guess, you know, after, you know, his father got him in. So, and we've had his teacher here on the air, Professor Tsurumi, who said that the guy was a miserable student. He used to sit in the back of the room with his bomber jacket and chewing gum, which apparently he didn't wear to National Guard duty, which is what he was issued the jacket for, because he never re-upped there.
But it's cool to do that at Harvard Business School. Gives you that veneer of being a real guy. These memos, by the way, Mark, were released by CBS. CBS's Dan Rather talks about some of the things that were done on Bush's behalf. Among them, the fact that apparently Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Killian had one evaluation of Bush, at least early on, and for public consumption, and then a very different evaluation in these memos that are just now coming to light. Let's listen to Dan Rather.
Mr. Bush had signed a 6-year commitment to fly for the Air Guard. And early on, the young pilot got glowing evaluations from his squadron commander, Colonel Jerry Killian, who called Lieutenant Bush an exceptionally fine young officer and pilot, who performed in an outstanding manner. That is part of the public record. But 60 Minutes has now obtained a number of documents we are told were taken from Colonel Killian's personal file, among them a never-before-seen memorandum from May 1972, where Colonel Killian writes that Lieutenant Bush called him to talk about how he can get out of coming to drill from now through November. Bush tells his commander he is working on a campaign in Alabama and may not have time to take his physical. Killian adds that he thinks Lieutenant Bush has gone over his head and is talking to someone upstairs. Colonel Killian died in 1984. We consulted a handwriting analyst and document expert who believes the material is authentic.
Gone over his head. Daddy, Daddy, can you help me? I don't want to get my physical because I'm polluted inside with drugs and liquor, and I think I'm going to get in trouble. Daddy, could you please call somebody?
Let's look at this May 19th, 1972 memorandum. This is a memorandum, an internal memorandum, a part of, I guess, Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Killian's private file.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about him getting, and this is him, of course, Lieutenant George W. Bush, getting his flight physical situation fixed. Says he will do that in Alabama if he stays in a flight status. I advised him of our investment in him and his commitment. I told him I had to have written acceptance before he would be transferred, but I think he's talking to someone upstairs. Now, think for a moment about the commitment of the Air National Guard people from all over this country, Mark Maron, who are over there in that 114-degree heat in Iraq,
yeah,
okay, facing death every minute.
Yeah.
And here's a guy.
He would have had one of those guys fly for him, because apparently that was something he asked for then, that they said in this thing where they said, officer expresses desire to transfer out of state, including assignment to non-flying billets. On recommendation of Lieutenant Colonel William D. Harris, I also suggest that we fill this critical billet with a more seasoned pilot from the list of qualified Vietnam pilots that have rotated. So he's the kind of guy that would have said, you know, why don't you send one of those guys who actually is committed to fighting for the country and is willing to risk his life, because I got partying to do.
And see...
Sorry, I didn't mean to...
No. Killian, Lieutenant Colonel Killian, talked to George W. Bush about his commitment. In other words, his commitment to serve his country. Something that he has questioned in John Kerry.
Right.
And yet... Here's a guy who, first of all, that had no impact on. Because we know he didn't suddenly decide, well, okay, I guess Lieutenant Colonel Killian's right. Maybe I should sign up to go to Vietnam. Yeah. Or maybe I should sign up to even fly a stinking plane. Or maybe I should go get my physical done.
None of that
happened. Yet he is here now, 30-some-odd years later, sending other people's kids off to die. For real.
Yeah. Excuses, displacement of blame, you know, not taking responsibility, the arrogance of it all, and, you know, and now he's completely insulated in this administration, and in a second, we'll tell you who he's blaming now, because it's beautiful. 15 past the hour, Air America Radio. Oh, wait. Call us here at Morning Sedition at 666.
Wait a minute.
Ah, sorry, that's the mark of the beast.
That's 866-303-2270.
That's 866-303-2270.
Crimes Against Nature, a new book by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., sets the record straight on George W. Bush, corporate greed, and the plunder of America. Crimes Against Nature makes the case that the administration has taken corporate cronyism to unprecedented heights, threatening our health, our national security, and our democracy. Al Franken calls Crimes Against Nature a passionate and devastatingly written attack on the Bush administration. Crimes Against Nature, the national bestseller by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a HarperCollins book, now available at bookstores and online at airamericaradio.com.
I think today, in particular, women have a tremendous amount that they're carrying around, men and women.
Wendy Light for the Doctor's Night Guard Dental Protector.
I own a flower shop. I have a lot on my plate. I grind my teeth very, very, very badly. I clench, I grind. The doctor's night guard took care of that. You know, we have the weight of the world on our shoulders. We don't need the weight of the world in our mouths.
Relieve the nightly grind with the doctor's night guard in the oral care section.
Sirius is giving away a Larson Senza sport boat.
No purchase necessary.
It's awesome.
Must be 18 or older to enter.
Hey, can I sell them?
Valid in the 48 contiguous states.
It even comes with Sirius.
It's online at 11:59 p.m. Eastern.
It's really cool.
On September 30th, 04.
Can I get a word in?
For official rules, see Sirius.com/Larson or select Larson dealer.
Bow, summer, water, fun.
Void where prohibited.
Are you done?
Yes.
Good. Why don't you get out so I can see how fast we're going?
This is your Icicle Insight on current events. Here's Peter B. Collins.
Ambassador Joseph Wilson, Chalabi, Ahmed Chalabi, head of the Iraqi National Congress, has provided faulty intelligence and had the chutzpah to tell a reporter recently that, well, we were heroes in error. And basically saying, who cares what the premise was for this war? We had to get rid of Saddam. We did. And, of course, overlooking the mess.
Well, that's right. And he's a convicted embezzler, convicted in the Jordanian courts for having looted his bank there, Petrobank. I think this is one of the great historic flimflams. He said on Frontline when somebody asked him what the United States got for its $150 billion, and his response was, well, got me back to Baghdad.
Ooh.
And I think that's the way he sees it. Now, the problem for us is we own this adventure, and we are now condemned to succeed because we will own the failure forever.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
Hi, I'm Meg Ryan for Doctors Without Borders. Did you know that more than 14 million people die each year from infectious diseases such as tuberculosis, sleeping sickness, and malaria? Doctors Without Borders, which works in more than 85 countries around the world, is tired of sending their patients home because the treatment is too old, too expensive, or not available. Get informed and get involved by visiting Doctors Without Borders' traveling exhibit called the Access Expo. It's coming to your city this year. For more information, go to their website, doctorswithoutborders.org.
Morning time. Yeah, wake up, sleepyhead. It's me, Mark Maron. I'm here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Good morning. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Call us, 866-303-2270. Would you like to hear from some vets, around this recent revelation about the blow monkey AWOL faux Christian pawn of the Cheney administration's death cult? So, how many can I string along there? I'm going to therapy today, thank God. Here's last night's dream. I'm in a dark, dingy basement with 200 noisy, angry guys. The only light is a couple of bare bulbs hanging overhead. I step into the circle of the light, and they say, hey, listen up. The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club. The second rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club. The third rule, no shirt, no shoes. Fourth rule, if this is your first night at Fight Club, you have to fight. I step aside and Dick Cheney and John Edwards step forward, flexing, giving each other the game face. One look at Cheney, I immediately regret the no shirt rule. Cheney scars. Edwards is way faster and has good form, but Cheney hits harder and bites. He clamps down on Edwards' ear, rips off a bloody chunk and spits it out, but then Edwards slips a punch and hits Cheney hard in the chest, and there's a high-pitched electronic whine and the smell of smoking wires, and Cheney keels over. Everyone cheers and chants, John, 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 John. Two guys drag Cheney off by the ankles. Then Bush and Kerry step forward. They've been trash-talking for weeks. This is personal. Bush is wearing a pleated Dockers. He's wearing pleated Dockers and waving and smirking and winking. Kerry's got on his camo fatigues and a necklace of ears. He's all business. I say, okay, guys, let's have a fair fight. No gouging. No soft money ads. The room gets quiet as Bush and Kerry slowly circle each other. Bush throws a punch, which Kerry stops cold with the open palm of his left hand. Then a split second later, Kerry unleashes the right. It's hard to say what shattered first, Bush's nose or his cheekbones. But in 2 seconds, the spoiled little man was splayed out on the concrete floor with blood spattered all over his freshly pressed Dockers. The cheering went on and on. Kerry just shrugged, cracked his neck, and walked off into the darkness. It was so amazing, I wanted to tell everyone. But, of course, the first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club. I woke up and my bed was filled with broken molars.
You know what? I can hear that neck crack.
Yeah. A little cocky neck crack. So here you go. Who's Bush blaming now for this? How did all this information get out there? Well, quote, it's clear the Department of Defense did not undertake as comprehensive a search as had been directed by the president. We have again asked that they ensure that any and all documents relating to Bush's military service are identified and released, end quote. They didn't do a good job enough investigating me and showing me what an idiot I am and what a draft-dodging AWOL... Coke, blow my, la, la, la. Hey, listen. Sorry, man.
Hey, listen. Somebody was on the line before.
This is hilarious, though. The Department of Defense is at fault. The president is saying the Department of Defense is at fault for not investigating him well enough.
Well enough, yeah. His Department of Defense.
It's closing in, man. The denial will not hold. The dispersal is, the blame dispersal policy will not hold. It's crumbling in on him if he's saying that the Department of Defense failed in their attempt to investigate me.
Somebody sat up and sent something on our lines about, it didn't bother you that Clinton didn't serve. See, it's one thing not to serve. It's something else to say you did when you actually did not. There is a difference.
Right, yeah. It's a lie.
Yeah.
And he's hiding the truth. And Cheney was a draft deferment for, five times. It's even supposed that, he might have gotten his wife pregnant to avoid the draft. Yeah, I mean, how do you know it didn't bother me that Clinton didn't serve?
Yeah.
Anyways, here we go. Linda in the Bronx. How are you?
Hi, Linda.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
All right, how
are
you
doing? Very good.
Mark Riley.
Yes, ma'am.
I sent you some material.
Oh, is this, I know which Linda this is. How you doing?
And let me say to you, gentlemen, I am so glad to hear, not that this is the first time you've done it, but I would even ask a request of you and your colleagues on the station to really also lame blame where it is due, and that is the feet of the major news organizations who have been carrying the Bush water for the past 3.5, almost 4 years.
Right.
And we all know it.
Yep.
And what I said to your screener was, thank goodness that Dan Rather, who is a major person in terms of the media and however he's labeled is really not relevant, the fact that he's actually bringing the truth and bringing the truth in a very bold relief, glaring fashion, so that it'd be very hard, not to say impossible, but very hard to have Bush wiggle out of this. Now, the only remaining question will be, what do the remainder of the major news organizations do with this?
Right. Well, you know, that's interesting because apparently the White House has contacted one of those organizations, NBC, about not having Kitty Kelly on. They can't, you know, they can't do anything about these revelations.
But
these revelations, people have actually gone out and dug. But this is about the cocaine, the alleged cocaine use.
The blow monkey thing. We're on the AWOL thing. So now it's the AWOL blow monkey
thing.
But you're absolutely right, though. They're trying to shut down Kitty Kelly because of the sort of blow monkey accusations. It's like the Bushes are the anti-Kennedys. And it's like, of course he was a blow monkey. Everyone knows that. And apparently, you know, there's, who is it? Neil's wife. What's her name?
Sharon
Bush is the one of the source. And she said she didn't know she was going to be on record, blah, blah, blah. But look, we know it's true. I mean, we've always known it's true. And all this stuff is coming down at once. Hey, we got a veteran on the phone, Ruth in Orlando. How are you?
Hi, Ruth.
Hey, I'm all right. How you guys doing?
Very well.
I got two quick things, because I know you probably got a lot of people calling. Number one, I am a veteran. My whole family is veterans. And one of the things that really enrages me about this bozo is that in 1978, when he ran for Congress, he put out campaign literature that said that he had not only served in the Air National Guard, but that he had also served in the United States Air Force.
Oh, ooh, what a liar.
You can find this. You can find this if you go to David Korn's website, The Nation. You can go to his log. You can find it. There's several places you can find this. In 1999, this came up, and they asked the Bush campaign about it, because you can't ask Bush because he won't talk about it.
Right.
So they asked the Bush campaign, and Karen Hughes said, oh, everybody knows that the Air National Guard is part of the Air Force. Wrong. I was in the Navy. The Marines are part of the Department of the Navy. I was not a Marine.
Right, exactly.
I was not an Air Force veteran. He claimed it, and then in 1999, they continued to lie about it.
Yeah, they love to do that. They think that
They freaking love to do this. And the other thing I wanted to say real quick is that everybody listening to this show needs to get on the phone and call CNN, call MSNBC every day for the next month, and never let them off the hook about reporting this, because they will let this story die if we don't stay on their butt.
And that's an order.
Good point.
Thank you, Ruth. She's absolutely right.
No, she is right.
And these guys will keep lying and lying and lying and lying, because people who are easily hypnotized because they're so paralyzed with fear and anger that they can't resolve in their own lives will begin to believe this. This is the politics of hate. It's the politics of fear. It's the politics of fraud. These guys exploit the death of Americans here in America and in Iraq in order to, you know, to run. They are definitely a death cult, and they are also exploiting the sort of pain of working people who are too, you know, under the gun to even see that they're being screwed by this administration's policies. And I wanted to say also that this is not some 527 thing. Do not let, and the way the Bush administration deals with this is that, you know, all these people just pop up, people you haven't seen before in a while. Who is that guy? Brent, what's his name? The new guy who just, I'm sorry, I'll get the information. But, yeah, it's like Rumsfeld will come out for a few minutes, and he'll disappear for a few months. Then they'll send out another person. McAuliffe will come out for a few minutes, and he'll disappear for a week or two. They just have these little talking heads that pop up occasionally, so you can't really attribute anything to any one person. And these are people that talk to the press. And what the deal is that this is reported fact. This is reported truth. This is pertinent now. This has nothing to do with the past. This is not a 527. This is not soft money. This is Dan Rather. This is the Boston Globe. This is news.
Well, you know, the other thing,
a lot of people don't know what news is anymore, Riley.
But you know what? The thing about this that makes it very difficult for Bush is that in order to do it, in order to attempt to get out of this, he's going to have to slander a dead serviceman. That being, of course, Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Killian. He's the one that has the paper trail. Dan Rather's people have found it to be authentic. We've got some, as far as Bush is concerned, this is dynamite. The idea that this guy had one public face and then a private face that said, wait a minute, you know, I'm being pressured on behalf of this one guy under my command. And how is George W. Bush going to explain it? That he didn't have anything to do with it? That his fingerprints aren't on it? I don't think so.
Absolutely. And stay on the phone. We got to go away, and I feel like I didn't give you guys enough time. So you stay on the phone, 866-303-2270. It's a long break, but hang out, and we'll be back. What do you got, Riley?
Well, coming up, of course, Iraq, Birth of a Nation, Rapture Watch, an update on the Iraq insurgency, and you on the phones here at Air America Radio.
Just because. I'm Tim Robbins. It's time to wake up with Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
We're fighting for our lives here.
Do you forget the names of the people you met last week, even the people you met last night? How would you like to be able to walk into a room, meet 50 people or more, and recall all their names instantly? I'm America's memory master, Matthew Gerke, and I'll show you how to do it in the Memory Switch System, the fast, easy memory improvement technology for busy people who are embarrassed by their bad memory. In the Memory Switch, I'll show you how to recall names, dates, facts, figures, numbers, even business and technical data in a split second, and remember it for years. I'll show you how to lock information you see, hear, and read into your memory so you can recall it right when you need it for as long as you need it. Give me just one short hour, and I'll help you improve your memory so dramatically people will notice. Call now and try the Memory Switch risk-free for 30 days. 1-800-581-4641. Guaranteed or your money back. 1-800-581-4641. 1-800-581-4641.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The words of a dead man have come back to haunt President Bush at a time when he can least afford it. The late Lieutenant Colonel Jerry B. Killian was Bush's former squadron commander of the Texas Air National Guard. Killian's memos on Bush's behavior paints a picture of an arrogant young trainee who had a hard time with authority while trying to serve his country. Killian memos show Bush was treated with kid gloves because of familial influence at the height of the Vietnam War. The Democrats are demanding answers. John Kerry is hitting his Republican opponent hard on the campaign trail, attacking Bush and his record in office. Kerry has yet to address the Killian memos. Kerry in recent months have been taking a drubbing from pro-Bush supporters about his military record. And Newsweek reports that the White House has not given any explanation for the sudden increase in the number of al-Qaeda leaders it has captured since the launch of their offensive on terrorism. U.S. intelligence indicates a change in the number of al-Qaeda figures in recent weeks. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Hi, this is Steve Earle reminding that your vote does make a difference.
And it's going to affect you for the next 4 years. I'm Jane Monahan. Register to vote.
In this particular election, it's going to affect the lives of your children and their children for years and years to come.
Please, be vocal. Speak out. Say something. Do something. Register to vote.
What's up, this Shifty? Make your vote count.
If you don't vote, someone else is going to decide your future.
The future's in your hands.
Apathy isn't sexy. This is Jennifer Marks. Register to vote.
Get serious about voting.
This is Earth and Sky. John Hart is an ecologist at the University of California, Berkeley.
In the mid-1980s, before global warming came to be recognized as fact by most scientists, Dr. Hart wondered how rising temperatures would affect plants.
My idea at that time was, well, the best way to really learn what's going on is to heat up an ecosystem and see what happens. And the work up to that point involving climate manipulation, it was really all done in little growth chambers where you would take a potted plant and subject it to different temperatures. And I wanted to look at whole ecosystem processes on a large scale.
So Hart and his team went to a subalpine meadow in rural Colorado, a place carpeted with flowers each summer. The scientists built towers and strung a cat's cradle of cables between them. Then they hung electric heaters from the cables. In 1990, they flipped a switch and have been heating the meadow ever since.
The aim of the study is to mimic a world that's 2 degrees Celsius warmer than the world we live in. Many climate scientists predict that Earth will warm by at least this much in the next 50 years. Some findings from the first 14 years of Hart's experiment on our next edition of Earth and Sky.
Or for more, you can visit our website at earthsky.org. Our thanks to the National Science Foundation, where discoveries begin. We're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
That's right, 33 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, Morning Sedition. I'm sorry I brought up McAuliffe.
Terry.
Terry McAuliffe.
Yeah.
DNC boss. We talked to him last
year.
Yeah,
I added him in a rant as part of the problem. And I mean, he might be in some respects, you know, but not in the particular problem I was talking about.
If we play that interview we had with him last week.
The guy I was trying to remember was Dan Bartlett.
Yeah.
Who I never see, and then he just pops out.
White House mouthpiece. Well, you know, they got McClellan.
There's like, well, how many White House mouthpieces are there?
They got Melman. They got any number. Remember, Karen Hughes is back in the fold. She was the chief mouthpiece at first when Bush was first, right after his election. Then she supposedly left because she was going to spend more time with her family. Now she's back. So she's yet another mouthpiece.
She's real evil, though. Here, let's do this. Since the handover of power, we're exploring various issues and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. This is Iraq, Birth of a Nation, Day 72. Leaders of Iraq. Yes. By now, you've probably heard that documents have been found that prove that President Bush didn't fulfill his obligations in the military. Let's talk about documents. Pieces of paper with writing on them. Harmless, right? Wrong! They can be worse than bombs. Why? Because after a bomb explodes once, it won't blow up again 30 years later. Learn from our mistakes. Start shredding now. But what about all that new democracy paperwork? Shred it! What about military records? Shred it. What about contracts with Halliburton? We'll take care of that. And then they'll shred it. The dangerous thing about documents is that they leave a trail. Bad, bad, bad. Trails bring down governments. If you shred everything now, then in 10 years you can rewrite history the way you want to remember it. Then shred that and start over. It's great. History is what pieces of paper say it is. No paper, no history. Genius. Every day is day one when you've got a good shredder. That reminds me, see if Halliburton will loan you their shredder. That baby is sweet. Until then, good luck and God bless. This is day 72 of Iraq. Birth of a Nation, live free or die. Sorry. I am sorry if I get worked up sometimes. I'm apologizing to the people in the studio for my behavior off mic. Smarty Pants Larson, sorry. All right? Kalo, sorry. Mark Riley, sorry. Brendan, P.W. McDonald, you missed it. Pashman, you never have to apologize to, because I think he runs on a different level. He's got, that's Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey. He's got these optimistic blinders on where he's so engaged, you could yell at him, and he'll just look at you and go, yeah, right, okay, Yahtzee, here we go. Thank you, Kent. That was beautifully done. That's Kent Jones, who is also in the room. And now let's get to the callers. How are you, Les? Les.
Les.
Fine. Okay, good.
The comment that I had, I was in the reserves at the same time the president was in the reserves. And one of the contracts that was signed when you joined up is if you missed a certain amount of reserve meetings, in my case and in his case, it would be any more than 5 half-days. If you missed 3 full days, you were sent away for 45 days. I was sent away for 45 days because I missed 5 days of reserve meetings.
Wow.
Where were you sent away to, Les?
Well, it was pretty easy. I was in the Coast Guard, and it was on Bermuda standby. But that's beside the point. My wife was pregnant. It was our first child. I was a young guy. I had done my 6 months. And I figured, well, nobody's going to do anything to you if you miss your meetings. Well, they did. And it was automatic. You couldn't even go to anybody to ask for dispensation.
So this guy, you're saying basically he's been coddled and babysat by the powers, that his father invested in all these friends, these cronies for years.
Well, I would say so. Joining the reserves or joining the National Guard was something that people tried to do. Everyone tried to do.
Yeah, even they know that. The National Guard knew that.
And in this particular case, he didn't go to his meetings. For the same, if I missed my meetings and I had to go away, I would even think that I would have a class action suit against the government, because if they operate one way with one person who signed the same contract, they have to operate with everybody that way.
Interesting point, yeah.
That was the part that really ticked me off, and I had been trying to contact people for the last 6 months when all this stuff was going on. I could try to tell people what happened to me and why it didn't happen to him.
Exactly. Yeah, good point, Les.
That is an excellent point.
It's a standard thing. It's the same way that, when they started mocking when the Republicans started mocking Kerry's Purple Hearts, how we had some veterans calling up saying, well, if they're going to mock his, then they're mocking all of them. And he's saying that this guy was held to a different standard because of his entitlement, his money, and his connections than he was. So, you know, he could have a class action lawsuit. I mean, I think he's saying that to make a point. But that is the point. That is the whole point. This entitlement, this wealth, this privilege that this kid has always had, this kid. Am I referring to the president as this kid?
Yeah.
This kid has always had, you know, is something that should really be, you know, used, you know, against him and used to judge his character.
Well, see, what you have here is a situation where the United States military is supposed to operate on one standard. That's what Les was talking about. If you missed a certain number of days, right, you faced a certain punishment. And I mean a certain punishment. George W. Bush apparently was able to circumvent direct orders,
protocol,
all these things that are supposed to make everybody more or less equal in the military. In other words, if you're a lieutenant in the military, you're a lieutenant.
And he's demanding respect on this military standard as commander-in-chief. And I think that the big indication, if we can string some things together, you know, with all this stuff coming out about the Guard, with the stuff, you know, the drug allegations, which I believe, you know, because I know it to be true in my heart, as Zell would say. I've looked into his heart, and I see a blow monkey. All right, I've looked into his soul, and I see a man that's had some good times in his life, doing cocaine, womanizing, avoiding his responsibilities. And I see a man, and I know who that man is. That man is the President of the United States. But is that, you know, this is, you know, he's asking for the respect, but the guy you see is the guy that has avoided everything his entire life because he could, because of his wealth, because of his privilege, because of his father's friends. The guy that's really the President of the United States is the guy that you saw in those 7 minutes after he was told that the United States was under attack by Andrew Card, sitting there listening to second graders read him a story. That's who he is. That's the soul you should look into. Look into that moment. It's on tape. Take a look at that. That's who it is. That is a blow monkey without his blow. That is a guy who has no idea what to do and demands to be respected as commander in chief. And, you know, the commander in chief, I mean, this is a guy that is overseeing the death of now over 1,000 American soldiers. You know, it's mind blowing. 40 past the hour. We'll be back on Air America Radio to talk about Iraq.
Found a radio show that talked about which beer was more likely to give you a hangover, or which new action movie was actually a chick flick in disguise. Wouldn't it be great to know that you're not the world's most gaseous man, despite what your ball and chain tells you? And ladies, wouldn't it be great to spend a little time listening in on what your guy likes to talk about when he's out with his buddies?
Oh, yeah.
I'm Mike Church, and welcome to my world.
Mike Church, weekdays 5 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Sirius Talk Central 148.
This is your Icicle Insight on the Environment. Here's Jerry Kay.
Russell Tramike asked the book Politics, Pollution, and Pandas.
It's a hard time, I think, for those who care about the environment. I think we're seeing special interests taking a very decisive role within the policy debates within the administration. We see ex-lobbyists from paper and pulp industry, coal, oil and gas, in important policy-making positions all through our government today. That was never the case when I was at EPA. We're also seeing the White House injecting itself into regulatory decisions, overriding, distorting the science, and essentially making decisions from a political standpoint. I never saw anything like that ever when I was administrator of EPA and under either Nixon or Ford.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
Okay, go ahead.
I have something very
sound it out.
Important.
Good.
To talk to dads about reading with your children. Most kids want to read. If you spend even a little time with them every night, it will help a lot. It will help most. What's this word?
Take each letter at a time.
Motivate.
Good job.
What's it mean?
No, it means to encourage or, you know, help someone do something better.
Help motivate them to try harder, which can help them become better readers, even faster.
Excellent.
When kids read better, It builds their confidence, and that can make a big difference in a kid's life while they grow up.
You're getting really good.
Thanks, Dad.
Keep going.
Greeting with you.
For more ideas on how to be a better dad, call 1-800-790-DADS. This has been a message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
All right, what do you want to read next?
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. Basketball great Charles Barkley.
I got a little pop quiz for you. What do I have a hard time keeping shut? And what is my nickname? And now I got one for you. Do you know your kid's principal's nickname?
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Why don't they talk about the issues? We're fighting for our lives here.
Oh, my gosh. 44 past the hour, Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
Hi. That's Mike Doty, right? We had him in here.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, I like
it's a great tune, man. That's not our version. That's the CD version. We have our own version here at Morning Edition because he played it for us right here in our studio.
That's right. That's coming out as the Kalo mix.
The Kalo mix. Kalo on the board listening to me yell. Things. Hey, quick kitten update. They're fine. One ripped my hand up because I forced him to love me. I grabbed this cat and I I held it and it was like, yeah. It was like... It was crazy.
Ooh.
But I learned some new things and I'm gonna keep at it.
Try a different approach to love.
I'm gonna keep a different approach, and then one of the cat ladies called me up, and she's got a box, and I'm gonna trap the mother and try to get it fixed. It's like ridiculous, you know. If I was with my wife, none of this would be happening. This is like my side project, and it's crazy.
In other words, if your wife was here, those cats would still be rummaging through garbage in the backyard.
Well, probably three of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was going to take two, and then I don't know. Let's get into the
Borzu, man. Borzu really, I mean, he laid some very, very deep stuff on us.
Borzu Dargahi, we talked to earlier. He's a journalist. He's in Baghdad. And it doesn't, it doesn't sound good, Mark.
Well, you know, he said he'd been back for a couple of weeks. Back in Baghdad, and he said the situation on the ground for everyday Iraqis was exactly the same as it was when he left, a couple months ago. That's the scariest part of what he said, because that says to me that the insurgents are always going to have a toehold because the Iraqis see this whole thing as being unfair to them.
Yeah, and he also said that, you know, not only is it the same in some respects, but there's a lot of sympathy that a lot of the younger people, younger kids, men, I'm assuming, in Iraq are starting to sympathize with the insurgents, and whether they're religious or not, they're starting to sort of, you know, glom on to their resistance and, you know, take a few shots themselves, and that, you know, there's roaming groups of teenagers. He almost painted this picture where, you know, it's sort of like a status thing to say you went out and shot at some soldiers.
And there are two levels of this now taking place, Mark. There is that residual and simmering resentment among Iraqis. But from what I've been given to understand, there is also a resentment among some U.S. troops who see some of the private contractors, some of the guys who are working for the private businesses over in Iraq, making a whole hell of a lot more money than they are for doing essentially the same job.
There's unaccounted for millions and millions of dollars that they don't even know what happened to it after Bremer took off.
Yeah.
And of course those guys are making a fortune, you know, and you would hope that it wouldn't be one of these sort of the ends justifies the means thing, but that seems to be what's happening, because it doesn't sound like there's going to be any peace, and that clearly the insurgency and terrorism and the whole, the entire landscape of Iraq, it's a mess. It's a real quagmire.
Well, look at how Fallujah has been reported, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
You go back a couple of months, there was all this fierce fighting going on. Then it completely dropped out of the news, right?
Yes.
So you might think, well, things have gotten calmed down, things have changed, things have gotten better. The fact of the matter is, the American troops and the Iraqi government troops can't set foot in Fallujah.
Right.
Essentially, there is a group of people, a court, an Islamic Mujahideen court, that runs the city of Fallujah. This is a city of 300,000 people. And Americans enter Fallujah at their peril.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
You've got these folks who are actually running things. And Fallujah is not the only city, as Boisou pointed out. There are other cities across Iraq that are out of control of Iraq's central government and out of the, certainly out of the control of the U.S. military. Now, the U.S. military, some of the generals, want to invade these cities, crush the resistance by force. There are a lot of politicians don't want to see that happen because they want to be able to say that the Iraqi government is able to stand on its own 2 feet. You ever see those nature shows
yeah.
where they have those little, deer or gazelles or whatever?
Sure.
And as soon as they're born, they got to run on their own 2 feet?
Yeah.
Well, that's what the Iraqi government's facing.
Yeah.
Only they're not able to do it.
No, and they're not unlike the deer. They're all sort of covered with,
weird bloody slime.
But
if they can't walk fast, what happens? They get eaten.
But the scariest thing is he says that the insurgency is, it's multifaceted in the sense that, or multi-faced, that there's secular people, there are Islamic extremists, there's somebody who's training the military in these new techniques. They're getting smarter. It's a very frightening scenario he set up. And I think the bottom line is that, this war, not only was it, miscalculated and there's no exit strategy and there was no real strategy, but like that retired general, Shinseki, when he advised Rumsfeld and those guys to go in with 300,000 if they were going to go in, and those guys says, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, what we have now is a situation that's completely out of control, and there's over 1,000 Americans dead, and it wasn't necessary to begin with, and it was based on a lie, and it was based on the philosophical leanings of a few crackpots in the administration, in the death cult.
Well, see, General Shinseki understood that you needed to have an overwhelming show of force on the ground to deal with the possibility of insurgencies after the main hostilities ended. And remember, that was May 1st, 2003. More than 860 U.S. troops have been killed since the supposed end of major combat operations. The most deadly month in that year, April of this year, 134 U.S. dead. We have 60-some-odd dead just in the month of August. The death toll is starting to climb, and you've got 720 Army people, 240 Marines. 70% of the dead were Caucasian men, 13% were Black, 12% were Latino, 22 women have been killed. More than 50% of those killed in Iraq were younger than the age of 26, and 77 of them were teenagers.
Yeah, and that's from Beth Neeson's report for CNN's Newsnight.
Yes.
These numbers, and there are vigils, and we're going to talk to you about where to get information on that when we come back in a second on Air America Radio.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call American Satellite. 1-800-264-0071. That's 1-800-264-0071. Ask how you can get Total Choice Premier free for 4 months, a $360 value. 1-800-264-0071. Call now.
At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends October 30th, 2004. New customers only. Annual programming commitment required.
The Smith family doesn't have serious first traffic and weather. The Jones family checks first traffic and weather before every trip. The Smith family doesn't have constantly updated traffic and weather conditions. The Jones family got to where they were going fast and are now having a great time. The Smiths are still stuck. Keep up with the Joneses and get where you're going this holiday weekend. First traffic and weather, Sirius 150 to 159.
Growing up on a farm out here, I just thought life was great. I had my own horse. I drove a tractor with my dad. For me, I thought farm life was the American dream. Hi, my name is Rex Phipps. That all changed when I was reminded how dangerous working on a farm can be. My cousin was almost killed in a terrible accident. I had to do something. I couldn't help my cousin, but I could help other people avoid this on their farms. So I volunteered at farm safety day camps for children of all ages, teaching kids about being safe around tractors, tools, and animals.
Just like I found a need to fill in my community, your community needs you. Find out how you can help in your hometown. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
Racial steering is illegal. It takes away your right to see the homes you want, deserve, and can afford. If you think you've been a victim of housing discrimination, contact the National Fair Housing Alliance. We'll respond to your call within 24 hours and inform you of your rights. Check us out online at nationalfairhousing.com or call 1-866-222-FAIR. That's 1-866-222-FAIR. A public service message brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Yeah.
We'll give you some contact numbers and some information about the vigils in a minute, but first, the Bible's Book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present Rapture Watch with Mort Cardinal Milfinson of the recently disgraced Diocese of Toadsuck, Arkansas.
Hear ye, O gentle town folk of Fort Chenalot. Lend me your ears, citizens of Covet thy neighbor's ville. Gather round, people of, I don't attend church regularly much anymore because I have more important things to do, Umunga. Set your TiVos for an eternity of teeth gnashing and a lot of lecturing, because you're in big trouble, and I'm not. That's right, the rapture is upon us, and it's as big as a whale, and some of us are about to set sail. Yesterday, a NASA space capsule bearing atomic specimens from deep space crash-landed in Utah, most likely at the beckoning of some matronly polygamous perverts. For it was written in Revelation 8675309, and the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and his great authority. Snakes! That's right. The Antichrist has landed and spread his ugly seed upon God's earth. And even worse, $260 million in taxpayers' money that could have gone into making fun of non-Christian religions has been wasted on science. And what about Mars, you may ask? Further exploration of this evil orb may discover evidence of methane, which may in turn be used to prove evidence of life on Mars, or at least of Paul Sorvino. Yep, that's a fart joke. Yet another indication of the end times. Listen to me. More exploration of Mars will only lead people further astray with false science and away from the stultifyingly boring life of religious fundamentalism they secretly long for. So keep on fornicating, fornicators, and we'll keep the light on for you. Inhale. May God have mercy on us all. This has been the Rapture Watch on Morning Sedition.
Thank you, Cardinal. Very, very exciting and interesting stuff.
I just crossed myself.
You're welcome, heathen.
We had a caller a while back that I believe it was Ruth who suggested that people contact their media outlets. If you want to email CNN, you can go cnn.feedback@cnn.com. You can fax at 404-827-3134. The main phone line is 404-827-1500. Email for MSNBC, that's viewerservices@msnbc.com, fax 201-583-5453, main phone line 201-583-5000. You can get this all on morningsedition.com. Contact for Fox News, that's satan@hell.com. There are vigils being held across the country. You can go to morningsedition.com for information about that for the 1,000-plus dead in Iraq. And, aside from that, I got an email here about the show.
And the previous bitchy email. Oh, earlier, yeah. I read an email. I listen to Al's show every show and sometimes majority report. I never listened to your show before. Didn't wake up early enough. Wow. It is awesome. More progressive than Al and funnier than Janine. Keep it up. Air America is a liberal progressive network, not just a shill for anyone who is a Democratic or on the left. Keep it up. Keep it funny. Great show. I hate you. Now I wake up this early every morning. From liberal swacker, likes Vaseline on toast.
On toast.
A reference to the Flaming Lips song, which was a great song, by the way. And they are a great band. I don't care what Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, New Jersey, has to say about their live performances.
He's just a hater.
Of the
Flaming Lips, yes. And you'll have to play me some of that soon.
All right.
Coming up in the next hour, the Presidential Daily Briefing. Foreign relations expert Stephen Cook talks about Iraq, the liberal agenda, and more here on Air America Radio.
A pop quiz for parents with third grade teacher Mr. Bonner.
Today's quiz will test your general knowledge. 1. Name one Hollywood director. 2. Name one actor from a TV sitcom. 3. Name one comedian. 4. Name one game show host. 5. Name one professional athlete. 6. Name one reality TV show. And one more question worth 100 points. Name one teacher you've met visiting your kid's school.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Old way.
And hearing a great deal about frequency modulation. The new high fidelity.
New way.
Superior sound resolution with S-Plex technology. Sirius, it's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The thoughts and words of a dead man have come back to haunt President Bush at the most inopportune time, 7 weeks before the election. Turns out that the late Lieutenant Colonel Jerry B. Killian was not so fond of his new recruit with political connections he had to supervise in the Texas Air National Guard 30 years ago. Killian was George W. Bush's former squadron commander. Killian had written a series of memos uncovered by CBS News. Those memos paint a graphic description of an arrogant young trainee who had a hard time with authority while trying to serve his country. Bush in recent weeks said he was proud of his record in the National Guard, at one time suggesting that he would have served in Vietnam had his unit been called. But it turns out members of his unit would never have gone to Vietnam. Former Lieutenant Texas Governor Ben Barnes confirmed that in a 60 Minutes interview with television's Dan Rather.
I was a young, ambitious politician. Doing what I thought that was acceptable, that was important to make friends, and I recommended a lot of people for the National Guard during the Vietnam era.
And you recommended George W. Bush?
Yes, I did.
Now, you said you did this for others. What can only be called preferential treatment for President Bush? Would you describe it as that?
Oh, I would describe it as preferential treatment.
Former Lieutenant Governor of Texas Ben Barnes says that he's ashamed of his actions years ago, trying to curry favor with the political elite at that time. In another development, Dan Rather points to more evidence that George W. Bush was treated with kid gloves because of his familial connections.
This memo is from August 18, 1973. Colonel Killian titled it CYA. In it, Killian says General Buck Stout, the man in charge of the Texas Air National Guard, is putting on pressure to sugarcoat an evaluation of Lieutenant Bush. Stout, a longtime friend and supporter of the Bush family, would not do an interview for this broadcast. The memo goes on, with Killian saying, "I'm having trouble running interference and doing my job."
Dan Rather in 60 Minutes last night. Newsweek reports that the Bush White House has been stone-faced silent for an explanation for the sudden increase in the number of al-Qaeda leaders that have been captured since the inception of the government's assault on the terrorist organization. Newsweek says the Bush administration had projected lower numbers of those who were either captured or killed. At issue was a sudden increase in that number by U.S. intelligence given just one day before President Bush gave his acceptance speech before the Republican National Convention in New York last week. Since the
the attack on 9/11 in New York, the government has long maintained that there was no environmental impact on those living around the former World Trade Center, but the Los Angeles Times reports that babies born to women who were pregnant and living near the center were smaller and had shorter gestation periods than those whose mothers lived in other parts of the city. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
The Smith family doesn't have serious first traffic and weather. The Jones family checks first traffic and weather before every trip. The Smith family doesn't have constantly updated traffic and weather conditions. The Jones family got to where they were going fast and are now having a great time. The Smiths are still stuck. Keep up with the Joneses and get where you're going this holiday weekend. First traffic and weather, Sirius 150 to 159.
This is Earth and Sky. We've had many, many questions from people over the last 2 months about the bright object in the east before dawn.
For example, in early July, Chris Rubenstrunk in Phoenix, Arizona wrote, "I've seen a brilliant object in the eastern sky. It was so bright that the first time I saw it, I thought it was an incoming plane. The object has appeared in the same location for the last week."
Chris and everyone else who's seeing this object in the eastern pre-dawn sky, it's the planet Venus. This is the brightest planet visible from Earth. It orbits the Sun one step inward from our orbit. Venus crossed in front of the Sun on June 8th for the first time in 120 years. Venus doesn't cross the Sun's face very often, according to our human sense of time, but all of us on Earth can see Venus often. It'll be the brightest object in the east before dawn through the end of this year.
There's another planet right next to Venus this week. It's a world being seen close up right now by the orbiting Cassini spacecraft. Saturn was shown by Cassini to have rings in a variety of pastel colors. Cassini also found Saturn's day to be about 6 minutes longer than earlier measurements indicated. This planet now appears to spin once on its axis about every 10 hours, 45 minutes. So look for golden Saturn near brilliant Venus in the east before dawn.
And for sky charts, come see us at earthsky.org. We're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
Wash off the blackboard. Put away the books. Take down the posters.
Put away the gym balls.
Empty out our desks.
Scrape our names off the lockers.
Pull our drawings off the walls. Put it all in the garbage.
Throw it away.
Throw it all away.
AIDS has killed more children worldwide than there are in all the grade schools in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, Atlanta, and Miami combined. The time to do something is now. The place is apathyislethal.org. AIDS is preventable. Apathy is lethal.
A public service announcement brought to you by the United Nations Foundation and the Ad Council.
Mark Maron, it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Fire truck, George W. Bush. Now, what do you think that W stands for? That W stands for wrong, wrong direction, wrong choices, wrong priorities, wrong judgment for our country.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Good morning, geniuses. 7 past the hour. The AWOL folk Christian blow monkey puppet of the Cheney administration death cult is now being, you know, hung out to dry by some people in the military because of the now infamous Killian memos.
Ah, you've decided to call them that, eh?
The Killian memos released today, or yesterday, on CBS's 60 Minutes pretty much indicate that the AWOL blow monkey commander-in-chief of the Cheney administration's Republican death cult, was guilty of not showing up, of being an entitled, rich little punk who got, you know, weaseled into the National Guard by his daddy's friends so he wouldn't have to serve the country, unlike John Kerry, who served the country, then thought about his commitment to the country and decided it was the right thing to do to protest a war that almost all Americans think was a little bit of a dark time in American history, of a mistake, of a waste of American lives. This is a guy that fought with his conscience, whereas our president didn't do any of that type of fighting. Basically, he did whatever he could to weasel out of even showing up for his National Guard duty, and no matter what state he was in, because he was too busy partying and just having a good time on his father's reputation and with his father's friend's help.
Oh, you know what? He fought with his conscience, all right, and he won.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. He decided he wasn't going to Vietnam. He had, as Dick Cheney says, other priorities, as you just laid out. And these memos show that the skids were greased for this man.
You talk about the Killian memos?
The Killian memos.
Yeah.
The depth of these memos is absolutely mind-boggling.
Let's go in it.
Absolutely mind-boggling. They were on 60 Minutes last night, as you mentioned. Dan Rather talks about the substance of them. They were internal memos, private file memos, of Bush's squadron commander, the late Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Killian.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that wrote these up. Now, the public consumption memos, the memos that actually went into Bush's jackets or military jacket, were pretty laudatory of Bush's service, at least his early service.
Yeah.
But then things started to change, and Lieutenant Colonel Killian started putting some other things about George W. Bush in his private jacket. Let's get to Dan Rather discussing this very issue.
Mr. Bush had signed a 6-year commitment to fly for the Air Guard. And early on, the young pilot got glowing evaluations from his squadron commander, Colonel Jerry Killian, who called Lieutenant Bush an exceptionally fine young officer and pilot who performed in an outstanding manner. That is part of the public record. But 60 Minutes has now obtained a number of documents we are told were taken from Colonel Killian's personal file, among them a never-before-seen memorandum from May 1972, where Colonel Killian writes that Lieutenant Bush called him to talk about how he can get out of coming to drill from now through November. Bush tells his commander he is working on a campaign in Alabama and may not have time to take his physical. Killian adds that he thinks Lieutenant Bush has gone over his head and is talking to someone upstairs.
This whiny, drunk, entitled, spoiled man, barely a man at that time and now in some ways, I think what he did was he was sent to Alabama by his father because he was being a belligerent drunk and causing there to be some negative attention drawn to the family.
Mm-hmm.
So he's sent to Alabama to be babysat by the Allisons, friends of the Bush family. And there he doesn't, apparently, according to the Allison widow, she said that she doesn't remember him ever suiting up. And now it becomes clear that he was trying to get out of his duty there for, you know, whether he's working on a campaign or not doesn't make any difference.
No, it doesn't. And it's called shirking.
Exactly, shirking. But not just shirking, saying, like, you know, can I get out of this? And the commanding officer was like, no, I don't think so. And they're like, I'm gonna call my dad's other friends.
Yeah.
So then he calls his dad's other friends to try and get out of it.
Well, see, you're talking now, again, about a situation where the United States government had invested thousands of dollars in training this man to be a pilot. This is his job. This is what the American military spent money on. And he goes to his commanding officer and says, none of that matters, really.
Yeah.
I got something else to do.
Right. $1 million it cost at that time. $1 million.
$1 million. In 1972 dollars.
And this is no small issue, people. If you're a conservative and you're listening to this, I mean, this is not like Tucker Carlson, who, you know, I've not thought about this in a long time. But, you know, in terms of, like, you know, violently releasing my spite for somebody. But I literally fantasize about walking up to Tucker Carlson and punching him in a stupid little bow-tied mug and just watching blood spout out of his lip and him going, there's no reason for that. Why are you doing that? You know, and like raising his pitch like he does. He was trying to dismiss this issue of the National Guard service. He's like, oh, so he didn't show up for the Air National Guard. So what? So what? It's the Air National Guard. No, it is an indictment of this president's character. This is a president that has called himself the war president. This is supposedly the commander-in-chief that is overseeing the deaths and the service of thousands in the military and in Iraq. This is a guy that needs to be taken to task for this because it's current. It's not some 527. It's not soft money ad campaign. These are facts. This is reported. Washington Post, New York Times, CBS, 60 Minutes. This isn't some slander campaign. This is truth.
A memorandum, August 1st, 1972, Lieutenant Colonel Jerry B. Killian. Quote, on this date, I ordered that First Lieutenant Bush be suspended from flight status due to failure to perform to USAF, that's the United States Air Force, TEX-ANG, that's Texas Air National Guard standards, and failure to meet annual physical examination as ordered. The officer has made no attempt to meet his training certification or flight physical.
Exactly. So that's shirking, or is it avoiding the possibility of being caught with something in his system, which has been the speculation? And certainly, according to Kitty Kelly, this AWOL blow monkey, apparently not only the Kitty Kelly's book, and it's making the president, it's making the Cheney administration very nervous because they're sending out memos to NBC. They're bullying.
They
people.
Called NBC. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh, where it's my voice okay. go? They called NBC.
Right.
And asked them not just not to do the Today Show, but not to interview Kitty Kelly on Hardball with Chris Matthews.
Because in the book, it says she quotes or sources Sharon Bush, Neil Bush's ex-wife, that George W. Bush did blow at Camp David while his father was president. Which, come on, of course, I mean, I'm an old blow monkey. He's doing blow everywhere. And look, do me a favor. If you did blow with George W. Bush, call us at 866-303-2270, because I know you're out there. When you do blow, generally, and he's not the kind of guy that would hoard the blow. He had enough money, and he had, you know, enough friends within the administration to get good blow, to get a lot of it, and you can tell he likes to be around people, so I know there's a lot of people out there that did blow with the Commander-in-Chief Blow Monkey AWOL guy.
Gee, how do you know so much about all this?
Because I've done blow.
Okay.
And I, you know, I was the kind of guy that, like, you know, I like to do other people's blow. I like to do my own blow. I like to have a little stash of my own blow.
It's a social drug, in case anyone hadn't
noticed.
Yeah,
because, like, it's sort of like morning radio, Mark. You know, you need to have one or two people just to blather on to.
Exactly.
You know?
That's exactly what it is. It is a social drug. And if you do it by yourself, you're going to talk to yourself.
Yeah.
You drive yourself crazy.
So where was I going with this? Oh, also, in Kitty Kelly's book, Laura Bush apparently smoked a little reefer, but might have dealt a bit too at Southern Methodist University. How do you like that? And I think I was sort of speculating yesterday that might have been how they first met. You know, the GW comes over all jacked up on the Yale, like, oh man, I gotta come down. And someone sent me over here. Can I get some of that reefer? You got any good, smoke? What's your name? How you doing? You're kind of cute. Well, listen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you bought weed from Laura Bush, call us at 866-303-2270. Laura says, well, listen, I don't think that reefer's going to really get you down off of that, but I've got a buddy named Ramon who has a bunch of Valiums. Oh, that'd be great. Let's go over there and get some Valiums, because I'm starting to feel like I'm going to die. My heart's beating too fast, and wow, you're kind of cute. And I think that might have been their first date.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure ended in disappointment, as dates on Yayo do.
Well.
But if you can make it work, woo-hoo, boy, does it work. We're taking your calls, 866-303-2270, reaching out to military personnel in response to the Killian memos. We'll be right back at 16 after on Air America Radio. You want to add your 2 cents? Give us a call at 866-303-2270 and give us your best shot.
You work hard and you put in extra hours at the office, but you're not getting ahead in your career. Well, here's an idea. Maybe the best place to put in extra hours isn't at work. Instead, try earning your college degree via the internet at University of Phoenix Online. A college degree continues to provide greater opportunity, responsibility, and reward. And by working just 15 to 20 hours a week at University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree in just 2 to 3 years. At University of Phoenix Online, we offer bachelor's and master's degree programs in business, management, accounting, marketing, IT, healthcare, criminal justice, education, nursing, and more. The fact is, it's better to spend a few years working on your college degree than to spend a lifetime working without it. Before you know it, you'll have the expertise and credentials you need to excel in your field. Call University of Phoenix online today at 1-800-624-1890. That's 1-800-624-1890.
Serious.
Illegal use of that hand.
Defending champion USC.
On the offense.
Defending champion LSU.
Repeat, go down.
The University of Michigan and Notre Dame.
The winningest college programs in history.
Texas at Oklahoma. Tennessee at Georgia.
Saturday is College Game Day on Sirius College Sports Radio. With the top 23 college football teams battling it out for the national championship trophy. Log on to Sirius.com or tune to the preview channel 184 for game time for your favorite team. Sirius Sports, the leader in sports play-by-play.
This is your Icicle Insight on current events. Here's Peter B. Collins.
The author of a new book called Where Have I Gone Right? The Right Mountain Guide to Getting the Job and Life You Want is Jim Hayhurst.
I was running a career center, and if what we were teaching was, if you figure out who you are, what your core skills, your core interest areas, and your core value systems are, you can then match them up with jobs, careers, and organizations, and in fact, the life you live. So the climb kind of crystallized these issues, and from that point on, I've been wandering around the world, giving speeches and writing books to say to people, if you're not feeling good in your job, if you don't feel good about the life you're leading, about a relationship you've got, start with yourself. Figure out who you are. What's at the very core of you? Core skills and core interest areas and core value systems. And if they don't match up with the things that are causing you discontent, you've got to stop the world for a little while and go and look and see where there is a good match for it.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad.
Where do you go?
When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Where do you go?
Truck. 866-303-2270. It's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley there.
Hi.
Kalo's on the board. It's Marty Pants Larson in the booth with Brendan P.W. McDonald Bashman running around like the manic son of Lewis and Linda Bashman, New Jersey, that he is. We've got calls. Did I say the number? 866-303-2270. Greg in Manhattan. How are you, Greg?
What's up, Greg?
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I was a screw-up in the military. And I can personally attest to how hard it is to get a black mark on the official record.
Yeah.
Yeah, they never want to say anything bad about you on the official record because then they have to demonstrate the disciplinary action they took. And if they take disciplinary action, then they have to explain why their leadership wasn't sufficient.
Oh, okay. So they just kind of like try to shuffle the responsibility elsewhere as long as possible or give the person as many chances as possible.
Yeah, and it's not so much giving people chances. It's just, you know, They got somebody like me or George Bush. They just want to send you off to another command for a couple of weeks.
Right.
Any excuse they get so that they don't have to explain why they're not doing their job.
Oh, so they become somebody else's problem.
Right.
Yeah, it's like...
Exactly. So were you in the Guard or...
No, active duty, Navy.
Oh, okay.
Oh, active duty.
Well, thanks for the information. Appreciate it, Jim. You take care.
Take care, Greg.
I forgot to do this. This is Presidential Palm Pilots came to us from Ramon a little earlier. 8 o'clock, wake up, stay on message. If you believe all the negative military records about me, then the terrorists have won. 10 a.m., have FBI find out where 60 Minutes gets their information. Discredit them, then hire them. 11:30 a.m., go to Pennsylvania again. Oh, wait, let me read that right. Go to Pennsylvania again. Note, find suit with no buttons or zippers. Beard? 1 p.m. Attend rally, Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Blame their lack of jobs on Philadelphia welfare queens. 3 p.m. Attend rally, Colmar, Pennsylvania. Blame high mercury levels in their water on greedy trial lawyers. 5 p.m. Security briefing. Number of terrorist attacks during my administration? 1. Number of terrorist attacks during the Kerry administration? He won't say. The man just keeps ducking the issue. 7 p.m. dinner with Jenna and Barbara. Ask if they have any college friends hot enough to seduce John Kerry sometime in late October. 9 p.m. Shred, shred, shred. If it's paper, shred it. 11 p.m. bedtime. Sleep on mattress stuffed with shredded medical files of my coke addiction. So basically what our Navy friend there just said was that it's very difficult to get them to put on record that you are being a problem.
Well, if you are known to the military as someone who has juice, like George W. Bush obviously was, Jerry Killian mentioned that there were people over him who seemed to be interceding on Bush's behalf, asking him to sugarcoat George W. Bush's evaluation. Now, at that point, he had a choice to make. Does he do what his superiors ask and maintain the job he has, which he might have wanted, or does he cross his superiors, release a bad evaluation, and hope they don't notice, or hope that they don't take any action against him?
Mm-hmm.
Because that, you know, the military has a chain of command.
Right.
And if somebody, they're not going to tell you on the record, they're not going to send you a memo, sugarcoat George Bush's evaluation, but they'll call you in, they'll talk to you about it, they'll see how you react to it.
Right, they plant the seed.
They plant the seed, and of course, if it's a superior, if it's General so-and-so that tells you that, then you pretty much figure, well, hey, I got to play along with the ballgame for whatever the reasons are.
So it's sort of like, what would you say if you were to suggest? All right, Jim in Hoboken, how are you, Jim?
Hey, Jim.
Hey, how you doing,
fellas?
Great show, love you guys.
Thanks a lot.
I was activated in I joined the National Guard in 1963 when Vietnam was just bleep on them. If I had gone, what I tried to do was avoid going in for 2 years.
Yeah.
6 months sounds better.
Yeah.
So, and I probably would have went to Germany and had a great time for 2 years.
Yeah.
But I didn't. So in 68, right after Johnson's speech, when he slipped in at the last line of the speech that he was activating 50,000 troops.
Yeah.
I was in a medical outfit in New York City, and we were activated and sent to Vietnam. But before we were activated, we brought it to court because on the contract we signed, the only time you could be activated was in a time of war or a national emergency.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Vietnam War wasn't declared.
Right. Mm. And if it's a national emergency, what are we doing halfway around the world?
Right, yeah.
So we fought in court. Actually, we went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and it saved me, all of us, about 5 months.
Yeah.
So when I was activated, I had 13 months to go. So actually, I only had to do 8 months in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And interned those 8 months. 20 years later, I have bone cancer from Agent Orange.
Oh, my God.
It was the use of my right arm.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of pisses me off that this guy ducked out on his last 13 months.
You know what's interesting, Jim? This was the 68 situation, which was, I guess, immediately following the Gulf of Tonkin resolution.
Right.
But was the last time that large numbers of reservists and National Guard were called up like this.
Right.
Like they are in Iraq now, where that's we have true. A huge number of them.
I think before that was probably the Berlin crisis.
Yes, in the early 60s.
Well, yeah, and this brings up the issue that we had another caller bring up earlier, is that why should this guy be held to a different standard just because he's got money, because he was entitled, because his father had friends than you, right, Jim?
That's right.
Thanks there for calling.
Thanks,
me.
Jim.
That seems to be a recurring theme. There's something like, it's horrible. Alan, how are you, Alan?
Hey, Alan.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I just wanted to say a couple things. First of all, I wanted to say my slogan is that the Republicans are a party of me and the Democrats are a party of we.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to say that I'm a recovering alcoholic, 17 years sober.
Ah, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
I just want to say that, you know, we got to look at the big problem that that George W. Bush is an alcoholic, a dry drunk.
Yes.
That
I try to help him, Alan. I have Recovery Corner. I do it every other day. I try to reach out, but I don't think he's working the program.
I don't think he's working the program, and I have to say that, you know, the commander, if I was a dry drunk, I could not be commander of the chief of our troops or
sure.
just about anything. And, you know, it's a sad problem, and he should come out and admit it. And, you know, that's how I feel about, you know, what he's got to do. I feel bad for him. We need to pray for him.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. I haven't quite crossed that threshold yet, but I understand what he's saying, and I think he's got to come out about a lot of things.
If he asked for your forgiveness, would you forgive him, Mark Maron?
If he asked for my forgiveness,
if he came out and said, "Look, it's absolutely true. I was a child of privilege. I shouldn't have, you know, I should have done my service the way I was supposed to. Forgive me." What would you say?
I would say that's great if you leave office and do community service. I think that maybe you should get a job at a rehab and help other addicts. I think that maybe you should try and, you know, go fly to Iraq and do, you know, how about doing some global service work like Jimmy Carter and build some things and oversee some construction, you know, really do.
You've obviously thought about this.
Do the humility thing, you know, be proactive in rebuilding and bringing hope as opposed to death, you know, that kind of stuff. How much time do we got? Oh, we got a minute. So that's it for the calls right now. We're going to take, we got a guest coming on the other side of this, which I'm looking forward to. We can learn a little bit more about Iraq. Stephen Cook, who is a next generation fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He specializes in Mideast policy. We've been sort of talking about Iraq on and off throughout the broadcast today because of the dark milestone of 1,000 dead and over, you know, up to 30,000 dead Iraqis, possibly. We talked to Borzu Dargahi earlier, and the situation is grim, and maybe this guy will give us a little historic perspective as well.
Yeah.
Thank you for all your calls. Sorry I couldn't get to all of you.
But, you know, there's some people that saying, and one of the callers, I think, brought this up earlier, there's a connection between George W. Bush's slackness in the Air National Guard and his conduct of the war in Iraq. And we can't lose sight of that. One kind of was predictive of the other, I think, for a lot of people.
Sure. It's weird that guy, when someone says pray for somebody, because that's what people are supposed to do. You know what I mean? Supposed to treat. It's hard for me to do that.
I know, but sometimes you have to.
All right, buddy.
Coming up, the Presidential Daily Briefing, foreign relations expert Stephen Cook, the liberal agenda, and much, much more for you here on Air America Radio.
The revolution is about to start. The revolution starts now. The all-new studio album by singer-songwriter Steve Earle is available now. The New York Times says Steve Earle is one of rock and roll's most beloved rebels, a roguish singer and songwriter who loves Emma Goldman and hates John Ashcroft. The New York Daily News says Steve Earle makes politics as personal as love. You can order this CD and listen to some tracks from The Revolution Starts Now at Air America's website, www.airamericaradio.com. Don't miss the revolution. Order Steve Earle's new CD from Artemis Records today at www.airamericaradio.com. The Revolution Starts Now is also available at Barnes & Noble music locations.
The Revolution Starts Now.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. If the series of anti-Carrie Swift boat ads have been considered fair game by the father of President George W. Bush, speculation abounds about his thoughts this morning on the so-called Killian memos. Memos are from the president's former squadron commander, the late Lieutenant Colonel Jerry B. Killian. Killian paints a picture that Bush disobeyed commands, resulting in a suspension. The Killian memos also reveal that Killian himself had a hard time covering for Bush 30 years ago. Bush's long main that he was proud of his service in the Texas Air National Guard. Bush White House has yet to respond to a Newsweek story suggesting a sudden increase in the number of al-Qaeda members captured or killed since the government's assault on the terrorist organization. U.S. intelligence without explanation increased the number of operatives captured or killed just the day before President Bush gave his acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
The Connection from NPR. Where do you go for your daily shot of intellectual caffeine? Think of The Connection as a supersized Vendi with a whole lot of frothy ideas, angles, and attitude. It will get you going, thinking, dreaming, and make it very hard to slow down. I'm Dick Gordon. Join us on The Connection from NPR.
The Connection, weekdays, live at 10 a.m. Eastern on NPR Talk 107.
This is Earth and Sky. Over 3,000 communities in the U.S. rely on the natural services of soils, roots, ferns, and leaves to absorb water, then slowly release it to underground and surface streams.
In other words, forested watersheds help provide the drinkable water we humans need. But where there's forest, there's also sometimes fire. Deborah Martin is with the U.S. Geological Survey in Boulder, Colorado. She talked with us about the effect of wildfire on forested watersheds.
One is that you lose a lot of the organic material that intercepts the rainfall. And the other is that you change the characteristics of the soil itself so that you actually get more runoff from burned areas.
And more flooding. After a wildfire, the type of rock in a burned area determines the extent of erosion. In a burned area dominated by relatively soft sedimentary rock,
they get what they call debris flows, which are huge mass movements of sediment that carry boulders the size of VWs down into some of these canyons that are below the burned area.
Martin says that after a fire, local authorities might shut off an intake into the water supply system to prevent ash and sediment from filling the reservoir. Thanks today to the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, we're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
Here. 33 past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Morning's Edition with Mark Riley.
Hi.
And me on Air America Radio. How you doing, everybody? Everything okay out there? There's strength today. You know, I no longer believe any polls. I am confident that the AWOL blow monkey, you know, puppet government, the AWOL blow monkey puppet of the Cheney administration's Republican death cult is going to go down. Right now, it's time to look at the presidential daily briefing, the highly classified top secret document that crosses George W. Bush's desk every morning. Today's PDB from the intelligence community is entitled Misdeeds by Past Self Target President Self. Mr. President, it has come to our attention that documents have come to the attention of 60 Minutes. These highly damaging records indicate you didn't fulfill your military obligations 30 years ago. This is a troubling development because you asked the Department of Defense to find and release all records about you. That way, if they found anything embarrassing, we could shred it before those traitors at 60 Minutes got their hands on it. You deserve to know how bad you are. The Pentagon, and unfortunately our office, have failed to tell you everything about you and the threat you pose to you. We realize you have been completely blindsided by you and had no idea you would turn into such a threat to you. Sorry. In the future, try not to do anything in the past that's embarrassing to you. While you cannot remove you from office, you should know that you're out there and you're dangerous to you. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security. Yeah, there you go. There's a little truth. The walls are closing in on him, man. Right now, he is a Next Generation Fellow, which is an interesting title I'm going to ask you about in a moment. At the Council on Foreign Relations, he specializes in U.S. Mideast policy. Stephen A. Cook is with us. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you guys.
Good to see you. We talked to you on the phone a couple months ago.
Yep.
Now you're awake. You're in the flesh.
I'm awake. I'm not in bed any longer. There you go. Unfortunately, you guys got me out of bed and all the way down here.
Oh, no. But
we thank you, though.
You put a tie on.
Yeah.
Are you going to work or is that
absolutely. I'm going to work. I didn't put this time in for you guys.
Okay. Oh. Well, get out. What is a next generation fellow? What does that mean?
It's a fancy title that the council supports scholars who are just beginning their careers.
Okay.
I finished my PhD about a year ago.
So you're kind of a green scholar.
I'm a green scholar.
All right. Jamming.
But a scholar nonetheless.
Oh, absolutely. I'm ready to go. Now, what's going on? Is Iraq out of control? Where are we at? We talked to Borzu Dargahi. You ever read his stuff?
Sure.
Yeah, he was like, you know, he called us from Baghdad today. It did not sound good.
Yeah. Well, the situation in Iraq isn't good and hasn't been good. And people keep asking me, is the situation spinning out of control? Has the security situation deteriorated? And I take issue with the premise of those questions. I don't think we ever really had control in Iraq. The Iraqi military and the regime melted away, and their plan all along was to engage in this insurgency and make our lives as miserable as possible, and it's sad to say, but that's exactly what's happened. And we haven't really gained control there, and bringing the rule of law to Iraq is going to be a long-term and difficult process.
Now, was this a failure, obviously, in U.S. policy, you know, post-invasion? I mean, did they have a plan? What, you know, how did this all break down like this?
You know, there actually was a plan. There was about 13 volumes of of plans that were put together by an interagency group headed by the State Department the day after Iraq. And when the Pentagon got a hold of this, they basically shelved it, and they said, we don't need this.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the idea was that the invasion would happen swiftly, which was correct, and that Iraqis would welcome Americans into Iraq, and that they'd help us rebuild the country relatively quickly with the huge resources that Iraq has. Nobody counted on this kind of insurgency.
Mm-hmm. Now, the U.S. military, at least some elements of the United States military over there, want to go in and crush the insurgencies, particularly in some of the larger cities like Fallujah and Najaf and places like that. What's wrong with that scenario? Why shouldn't the U.S. military just go in and crush the opposition?
Well, I think you're absolutely right that there are people within the military who see that the way out of this is to actually take these people out. But it's a very, very difficult situation because the United States has backed itself into a corner where there's no good option. So, for example, if you want to be, you know, cold, hard, realistic military, you know, situation, take a look at it. We should clean these Fallujah out, clean Najaf out. But what we do is we risk two things. One, inflaming the rest of the population. The pictures coming over Al Jazeera, Al Arabiya are very disturbing to look at. Those are the channels that are broadcast throughout the Arab world. And our position in the Arab world is already compromised by this war, broader U.S. Middle East policy. The second problem is that it would necessarily weaken an Iraqi government that we want to move forward and establish a credible political process starting in January. Now, as the violence continues, we're already into the second week of September. Time is very compressed. We're in a presidential election season. It's unclear as the security situation continues to be out of control in Iraq whether we can actually get to those elections in January.
Unbelievable. Characterize the insurgency for us, because from what we understand and from talking to Borzi, there's a tremendous amount of the country that is really, you know, out of control in the sense that the U.S. has no footing there and they're losing cities. And it becomes unclear to me whether this is are they radical Islamists or are they, you know, secular nationalists? Are they Islamic nationalists?
Right. Very interesting question again, because if you listen to what's being reported out of the Pentagon or other U.S. government agencies, we don't really have a clear idea. First, it was a few 3,000 to 5,000 people. It was foreign jihadis. But anybody who has had some experience on the ground there knows that this is primarily an Iraqi phenomenon. There are foreign jihadis who are there. And you're quite right. We have not necessarily turned our back, but it's a strategy that we initially pursued when we came up against this stiff resistance, which was to pull out of the cities, to pull out of the Sunni triangle and contain the violence. Well, what essentially we did by ceasing to patrol, ceasing to be in there, ceasing to root out the terrorists, is we allowed the insurgents and the terrorists to regroup, to organize, to plan operations. So now we have no presence in there. And basically, Fallujah, for example, has become the Islamic Republic of Fallujah. And what you have is actually a fusion of people from the former regime and Islamic militants who have come together, a kind of alliance of convenience, to oppose the United States and its partners in Iraq. It's a tremendous problem.
Wow. So, okay. Well, we're going to talk about, you know, what happens next with Stephen Cook when we come back. It's 40 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Steve Earle reminding you that your vote does make a difference.
And it's going to affect you for the next 4 years. I'm Jean Monte. Register to vote.
In this particular election, it's going to affect the lives of your children and their children for years and years to come.
Please, be vocal. Speak out. Say something. Do something. Register to vote.
What's up, this shifty? Make your vote count.
If you don't vote, someone else is going to decide your future.
The future's in your hands.
Apathy isn't sexy. This is Jennifer Marks. Register to vote.
Get serious about voting.
This is your Icicle Insight on current events. Here's Peter B. Collins,
the author of a new book called Where Have I Gone Right? The Right Mountain Guide to Getting the Job and Life You Want, is Jim Hayhurst. Explain how your trek up Mount Everest changed your views about what's important in life and how to focus on getting what you really want.
We watched two guys die, and as we tried to understand why they had died, it became apparent in the first case that one of them had died because he hadn't figured out that his skills were no match for a mountain as big as Everest. He either didn't figure out what his skills were, or he didn't take take the time to match them with the climb. And that kind of stuck in our heads as a little bit as a learning we should understand. Second guy died because his values didn't match the needs of Mount Everest. He went on alone. And you can't climb Everest alone. I mean, you get winds of 150 miles an hour. You get temperatures of, you know, minus 60 below. It's impossible to do alone. He went on independently and he eventually died. So his values didn't match up with the needs of Everest.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
Stuart, how are those hedges coming, little man?
Dad!
Sorry, you're not little. You're 5. And you're holding a 10-horsepower gas hedge trimmer. I should watch myself, huh? So, fire her up and show those hedges who they're messing with.
But I could get hurt.
Don't focus on the negative. Come on, go get him, killer! Ah, that's the battle cry of a lawn warrior. Now, steady the blade! Where are those hedges?
Dad!
Think of the trimmer as an extension of your arm. Come on, keep that arm away from...
The cat!
The cat! Oh, and the neighbor's new car!
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Dad, make it stop!
Come back here. You can do the neighbor's shrubs after you finish ours.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Hi, everybody. It's me, Joe DiMassina, the Rad, recording artist, actress, and athlete against drunk driving. I'm here to remind you, if you celebrate, then designate. Because if you booze and cruise, you lose.
We can be strong and do anything if we dare.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Fire truck! 43 past the hour, Mark Maron with Mark Riley on Morning Edition.
Good morning.
The radio. I could explain that to you, Stephen, but I can't do
You're
it.
You're
right
freaking
now.
Out our guest, Maron.
There's a fire truck happening. He's just like, what? Stephen Cook is our guest. He's a Next Generation Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. We're talking about Iraq. He specializes in U.S. Mideast policy. Now, we talked to Borzu Dargahi earlier, and I asked him, you know, right out, I said, you know, how many Baathists are involved in this insurgence? Because he was saying that they are getting better militarily. And you say that there are some.
Well, clearly, the Baathists, members of the former Republican Guard and military organizations in Iraq, have allied themselves with various groups within the insurgency, Islamic activists, terrorists, etc. And it's clear that they are providing professional military training to these groups.
How much ammunition do they have? It seems like you never hear about that. Is there new ammunition coming in?
This country is awash in weaponry.
Okay.
Everybody's got a gun.
Right.
There seems to be an endless supply. Hmm. As much as the U.S. finds this stuff and destroys it and carts it away, there's just more of it. The borders are porous. It's coming from all ends. It's a big problem.
Mm-hmm. Why haven't we've heard about all of these agreements with Muqtada al-Sadr, the radical Shiite cleric. It's almost like his title now when you talk about him.
The rockin' radical Shiite cleric.
Why haven't these agreements been able to stick? Why is there seems to be this continuing violence on the part of the militants that are loyal to him?
Well, primarily because Muqtada al-Sadr is not a man of his word, and he essentially is trying to outmaneuver all of his other rivals for leadership in Iraq. And the only way he can do that, because he's a cleric, but he doesn't have the kind of prestige that somebody like Ayatollah al-Sistani has.
Mm-hmm.
So he's tried to outmaneuver them by cobbling together this Mahdi army and this following that has taken up arms against the occupation and its perceived collaborators to establish his nationalist bona fides. So every time he says, okay, I'm going to disarm, or every time he says, I'm going to engage in the political process, this is just another way of snaking out of a particularly bad position he's painted himself in, for example, in Najaf last month. Mm-hmm. And so he can live to fight another day. And from what I understand is some commanders in the field, U.S. commanders in the field, are very unhappy about the situation because just like in the spring where they had him cornered and it was time to undo the Mahdi army, he was allowed to say, okay, I'm going to disarm. My men should go back to their home villages and do their duty. Now, to me, that said, do their duty, that was a loaded phrase.
Keep fighting.
Exactly. And after this agreement, it was amazing. Within 15 minutes of the agreement, the Mahdi army is walking down the streets of Najaf with their AK-47s and other weapons and rocket-propelled grenades. You had to know that this was going to happen over and over again.
So he never had any intention, then, of disarming?
I don't believe so. If you go by the man's actions rather than his words, he never had any intention to
disarm. So what do we do now? What happens now? I mean,
again, we are in an extraordinarily difficult position where anything we do has dangerous ramifications. So, unfortunately, if you want to tamp down on the Muqtada al-Sadr thing, you can either go after him militarily, which presents a risk of him becoming a martyr and his people continuing to fight on and on and on. Or if you integrate him into the political process, you run the risk of him actually becoming a political leader in the new Iraq. Which
he could win then.
Well, it's unclear. Everything as polling is as reliable as here in the United States. I think it's, you know, even more unreliable as it is in Iraq. But it's clear that he does have a following. And Sadr City is this teeming slum where he's been able to garner a significant following. Regardless of whether he wins or he doesn't win, he'd be able to influence the political system.
Now, if he were to indicate that he was going to run, do you think that would drive Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani to run?
Well, I can't foresee the interim government or the United States really permitting Muqtada al-Sadr to, you know, come out as a presidential candidate in the new Iraq. It seems to me that that's beyond what anybody's willing to tolerate. Ayatollah Ali Sistani is not going to run as an actual candidate. What he's going to do is stick to the background like he's been doing, and he has politicians who are allied with him who follow the kinds of things that he, you know, his policies, his perspective, his view of the world, which we're really not clear on what he has planned for the new Iraq. I've been saying over and over again in interviews like this that nobody's really acting normally in Iraq right now. We'll have to see what happens post-elections, and if we ever get to a point where the United States draws down in Iraq, then that's when we're going to really see fireworks, I think.
Wow. So that's... Thank you for being with us, Stephen Cook.
Hey,
I really appreciate it.
You managed to scare the hell out of both of us.
It's mind-blowing stuff. We'll be back after this with the Liberal Agenda on Air America Radio.
Candidate for governor Dickie Pillager has a message for you, the voter.
I always turn to nature to make sense of the world, but our environment is under siege. Under siege, under fire.
Cut!
Not
under
attack.
Anything, Dickie. It's endangered.
He's got big ideas about the environment.
Have to get our priorities straight. The whole environmental arena, that's a priority.
Richard Dickie Pillager on law enforcement.
Frontier justice. All you needed was a good strong rope and a tree to hang it from.
Social issues.
Organizations formed to help these things will be happy to pitch in if only government would get out of their way.
Cooking.
If you're going to have a front burner, which is where you want your priorities, it's like cooking.
Finally, a candidate with all the right answers. Finally, a candidate with a vision for America. In the new movie from acclaimed director John Sayles, Silver City, rated R for language. Coming soon to select cities.
Sirius is giving away a Larson Senza sports boat.
No purchase necessary.
It's awesome!
Must be 18 or older to enter.
Hey, can I sell them?
Valid in the 48 contiguous states.
It even comes with Sirius.
It's online at 11:59 p.m. Eastern.
It's really cool!
On September 30th, 04.
Can I get a word in?
For official rules, see Sirius.com/Larson or select Larson dealer.
Bow, summer, water, fun!
Void where prohibited.
Are you done?
Yes.
Good! Why don't you get out so I can see how fast we're going?
What's up with the sink?
Somebody left it on. It's been running all day.
Really?
Yeah, I've been in here about 3 times since this morning. Still going.
Okay, that is so not cool.
What's not cool?
Look at the faucet.
Oh.
How long has it been like this?
At least since this morning.
What do you guys think? Someone just washed their hands, left it on, and then, like, walked off?
I guess.
That's so weird. How do you just leave on a faucet?
It's kind of bizarre.
Should we do something?
We should tell somebody.
We can leave a note.
You guys weren't using this, were you? Not us. No.
Don't just take a stand. Act. The most powerful way is to register and vote. It's ridiculously simple. Log on to registerandvote2004.org and take action. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ag Council.
Big ears.
Smart feet.
Buck teeth.
Bushy hair.
Pug nose.
Of all the things to pass down to your child, difficulty reading shouldn't be one of them. That's why at Family Learning Programs, parents and kids learn together so they succeed together. On things like GED preparation, English as a second language, and more. The best way out is by coming in. Call 1-877-FAMLIT1 and pass down the greatest thing of all.
A chance.
Brought to you by the National Center for Family Literacy and the Ad Council.
Blah, 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 blah.
Coming in for landing, 52 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America. That was interesting talking to Stephen Cook.
It was.
I wonder if I'm starting to wonder if Sistani is the Barzini of Iraq. Like, it was Barzini all along.
Yep.
I don't know, man. It sounds like he's setting him up.
You must let me wet my beak.
Yeah. Let's take a couple of calls. We got David in New York. David, how are you?
What's up, David?
Yeah, I was in the National Guard for about 8 years. I've been on active duty since April. When I was in the National Guard, I wanted, people to realize how easy it is, to not show up
right. And
still get out honorably. I mean, I can think of right now at least, I'm a 10 to 15 people, who would not show up to drills. And what they do is they put them in the inactive ready reserve.
Oh, okay.
Which is, what you hear about usually, a lot of times you'll hear about the 6+2.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The 2 years inactive. And what they'll do is they'll just ease them in there because, it'll be... they finish out their time basically in the roll books from the Army. Like, they're on the books.
They just move them around because they're not coming in anyways.
Right. So they just move them around and nothing happens to them. And I've worked in retention before, and what they're trying to do now, they're trying to call these people and get them to come back. And you'd see on their list, you could see on the list, on the retention list, it would say why they got out. And a lot of these, it'll say unsatisfactory participant.
Right.
But even that's easy to get taken care of.
Right. All right. So,
another thing on the on the drug test that I followed people, it depended on who you were. They could easily erase if somebody failed a drug test because the National Guard is part of the state and they don't fall under federal Army regulations.
Okay.
Interesting.
Well, so what he's saying is, that's what Tucker Carlson said before I started fantasizing about giving him a bloody nose, was that he was honorably discharged. He was honorably,
what David brought up that was interesting to me was the idea that people could get all this stuff kind of, shuffled off to the side. Because the fact is, if you miss a certain number of drills, you're supposed to go on active duty. Yeah. That's supposed to be the punishment for missing the drills. That's what George Bush managed to avoid when he was the first lieutenant back in the Texas Air.
Yeah, and also that he's resting his laurels on being a military guy who did service, that he served the same as anyone else and he got honorably discharged. It's just the fact that, the standards aren't different for him. Even if the National Guard is a little lax in this stuff, it's still the President of the United States must be judged on the integrity of his character because that's what he's running on, and he has none. And that's, indicated in so many ways in the information that's coming out today, which is not slander, it's not a 527, reported fact, and this is the guy that is supposed to be the respected commander-in-chief who slacked off because he was spoiled, he was rich, he felt entitled, he never took responsibility for any of it. And that's the truth of the matter, and that's not just me saying it, it's the truth. We got KB in Manhattan, what's going on?
Hey.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
You both make a great duo, and I'm glad to wake up to you in the morning and hear your program.
Thank you.
I want to, all of this is reminding me of a Star Trek episode, all of the revelations and the problem America is facing now. Star Trek episode number 7 entitled, What Are Little Girls Made Of? With Ted Cassidy as an android by the name of Ruck, Michael Strong as Dr. Roger Corby, and Sherry Jackson as Andrea.
Who wrote that one, KB?
That was written by Robert Block.
Uh-huh. Now, Ted Cassidy was the guy that played Lurch in the Addams Family, right?
That is right. And he was in also Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah.
he was an android, and the last few of an last one of an android race that had killed their creators, who were humanoid.
Uh-huh.
And the androids could not stand their logical humanoids, so they ended up revolting, and the humanoids were trying to turn them off.
Mm.
So they were trying to, when Dr. Roger Corby came and landed on the planet and started to, again, bring more humans to the planet, that reminded Ruck of why they destroyed their creators and the equation. He was trying to think of the equation.
Yeah.
And he finally figured it out with the help of Captain Kirk, that how can you protect someone who is trying to kill you?
Right,
and
right.
America has to, as more and more Americans are waking up to that question, that equation, how are we going to stand by a commander-in-chief who is trying to kill us?
Oh, thank you for the analogy, KB. I appreciate it.
Is that from Star Trek?
Yeah, that was a good call.
Ted Cassidy. I hadn't heard that name in years.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to him a little more about, you know, whether he has it on DVD or actually has it on Laserdisc. So
he's a Trekkie. He's probably got it on all formats.
I was never it's not that
me
I don't
either.
Like it. I just didn't lock in like that. But, you know, I'm glad there's somebody out there that, Smart Pants Larson, I'm sure, knew exactly what he was talking about. Here's your liberal agenda today. Here it is. Have 60 Minutes interview with Ben Barnes released theatrically in IMAX and Dolby. 2, unionized contestants on The Apprentice. 3, if assault weapons ban lapses, arm yourself with better information and more withering comments. 4, throw glittering celebrity-filled party to celebrate court decision saying partial birth abortion is unconstitutional. Order partial birth abortion ice sculpture.
Oh,
5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, why are we always talking about the terrorists winning? Can't we each do our own thing without it getting so competitive? End quote. Man, what a show.
Yeah, it was
what do
incredible.
What do we got tomorrow there, right?
Tomorrow we're going to look at what President Bush didn't do to protect us on September 11, 2001, here on Air America Radio. Tomorrow's morning's edition. Have a good day, Marin.
You too, Riley.